Colorado.com.
This is Colorado's locally owned and operated AM 1150 KNRC, Inglewood, Denver's premier talk station.
KNRC News Time, 12 o'clock.
NBC News Radio, I'm Robert Hager. Martha Stewart says she's not afraid and still doesn't think she did anything wrong. The domestic advisor has been sentenced to 5 months in prison.
What was a small personal matter became over the last 2 years an almost fatal circus event of unprecedented proportions.
Stewart, who was also fined $30,000, was convicted on charges relating to stock trading scandal. She'll remain free pending an appeal. U.S. officials don't have many good things to say about the Philippines' decision to start withdrawing its troops from Iraq. That was a demand made by kidnappers holding a Filipino hostage. Critics say Manila's caving in to terrorists. And another sign inflation is still in hiding, the consumer price index rose a modest 0.3% last month. That's half as much as the increase posted in May. The Federal Reserve recently raised interest rates to keep inflation in check. I'm Robert Hager, NBC News Radio.
There's a special place you go for painting and decorating, your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. And during Cool Summer Savings, you'll find special deals, too. Right now, save $7 a gallon on Super Paint Interior and Exterior, our best-selling paints. So stop in for great service, expert advice, and right now, one cool sale. When it comes to paint and wallpaper, it's what we do, it's all we do. Ask how, ask now. Ask Sherwin-Williams. For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com.
Thinking about buying a used vehicle from a private owner? Think about this. Every Ford Quality Check certified pre-owned vehicle has to pass a rigorous 115-point inspection. The ones that do qualify come with 6 years, 75,000-mile powertrain, limited warranty coverage, and 24-hour roadside assistance. Think you'll get a 3.9% interest rate from a private owner? I don't think so. If we don't certify it, it's just used. Not all buyers will qualify for Ford credit financing. Take delivery from dealer stock by September 30th, 04. See dealer for warranty details or visit FordCPO.com.
Winner of 8 Associated Press Awards for journalistic excellence, including Best Newscast, award-winning news and entertaining talk. This is Denver's AM 1150 KNRC.
Good afternoon. Cloudy, 71 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin, KNRC News. A prison sentence for a man who threatened the woman accusing Kobe Bryant of rape. I'll have that story in a moment. First, let's check traffic. Here's Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
Big problems if you're trying to get away early for the weekend and going along I-70 in the mountains. The report is service of General Motors. It is an SUV pulling a trailer that has overturned westbound I-70 at the Chief Hoza interchange. Emergency equipment on the scene tending to the injured people, at least one of whom is injured anyway. Traffic is getting around this on the shoulder, but both the Department of Transportation and the State Patrol are saying expect some lengthy delays up there. 14th and Wadsworth and Lakewood, watch for a minor collision. Everything else around town seems to be moving along in fairly decent shape. When the unexpected happens, OnStar gives you and your family the safety and security you deserve. Just push a button. OnStar advisors are ready to help. OnStar, always there, always ready. Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
An Iowa man who made a telephone threat to the woman accusing Kobe Bryant of rape is going behind bars, Bruce Morton reports.
John William Roach was sentenced to 4 months in a South Dakota federal prison camp. He was guilty of threatening the life by phone of the woman accusing Bryant of rape. He must also pay a $1,000 fine. Roach's call was initially heard by the accuser's father, who phoned the FBI. Roach must turn himself into authorities by August 16th. Bruce Morton, Denver.
This report brought to you by Carfax. A lawsuit against the Denver Police Department could be on the way from the U.S. Justice Department. The DOJ is considering suing the police department to mandate reforms. This comes in the wake of last weekend's fatal shooting involving a DPD officer. Colorado's fire danger is decreasing. State and federal land managers are no longer expecting an above-average wildfire season this summer. Rainfall and cooler-than-average temperatures in June help lessen the fire danger to most of the West. In sports, the second of four for the Colorado Rockies. Rockies and San Francisco Giants tonight at Coors Field. Sean Estes gets the start for the Rocks. Delayed because of an accident today? Don't end up with that car. Ask your dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report now with the buyback guarantee or visit carfax.com for details. Your exclusive Weather Channel forecast is next. KNRC News Time is 12:04.
Aren't you tired of all the clutter on the other talk stations?
Did you hear that?
Does it seem like they have any time to talk issues? The answer is no. Keep it here on Denver's premier talk station, AM 1150, KNRC.
KNRC. Sell your car.
Phil,
What is all this?
We're trying to beef up our advertising for the Mile High Suburban Buy. Decided to give these Gregorian monks a try.
What's the Mile High Suburban Buy?
It's the newest way to sell your car. It's all the rage.
I can hear that.
See, we offer sellers access to over 500,000 readers in 19 suburban newspapers. You know, the ones you actually read.
Gotcha. How much are you charging?
$29.99.
They're really taking this seriously.
Yeah, we all are. There are a lot of ways to sell your car, and we want to be the best. We've put together a crack team of classified employees who will help you craft your message and make your ad work for you. We're serious about helping real people in real communities sell their cars fast for less.
Sounds great. I've got a car I'd like to sell.
Just call Community Classifieds at 303-279-5541. That's 303-279-5541. Okay, he gets it.
Sorry.
Call Community Classifieds today, 303-279-5541.
Stephanie DeLuca with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. The National Weather Service has issued a flood watch until 10 o'clock tonight. Now, this is for western and southern Jefferson, central Larimer, western Douglas, and central Boulder. We're going to see scattered showers and storms, isolated severe weather possible, heavy rain, hail, and damaging winds, the primary threats. Not as warm today, high of 76. Later on tonight, mostly cloudy, scattered evening showers and storms. Then partly cloudy, patchy fog overnight, 55. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, an isolated afternoon storm and 86. Sunday, chance of an afternoon storm and 89. For the Weather Channel, I'm Stephanie DeLuca on AM 1150 KNRC.
Cloudy and 71 now. KNRC News Time is 12:06. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 12:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
From AM 1150 KNRC, Denver's choice for talk. Now, one of the Mile High City's most compelling talk hosts, Enid Goldstein. The producer is Joe Anderson. Board operations, Jordan Lyles. Now, here's Enid.
12:06, 6 minutes after 12 o'clock. Welcome to the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. Coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. We do these programs once a month live from the Press Club. You don't have to be a member to come in and have lunch. Today, the theme of the show is gambling, gaming, and we have a number of guests, some of whom are sort of on the theme and some of whom are not quite on the theme. We'll be joined later in the broadcast by mystery writer, a Clinton favorite, Walter Mosley. He has a brand new book. He'll be at Tattered Covers tonight. He's got a brand new E.Z. Rollins mystery, and he's lots of fun to read. We're also going to be joined by Gil Asakawa, online content editor of the Denver Post. He has a new book. We'll be joined later by Gary Eklund of SPN. He's going to try and teach me the impossible task of how to play Texas Hold'em. And right now, we're joined by a great favorite in Denver, Norm Clark, who was for a long time the gossip columnist at the Rocky Mountain News, and before that, sports writer, Penny Parker's predecessor. She mentioned you in her column yesterday. And now you are residing in Vegas as a gossip columnist for the Las Vegas News Review. Norm Clark, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Great to be back.
What's it like to be in Vegas, and what are the contrasts you can make between Vegas and Denver? Or is that too impossible to draw those kinds of contrasts?
Well, Las Vegas right now has probably never been hotter, and that's saying a lot because Las Vegas has had a lot of, real golden era. That you go back to the Rat Pack and in the 90s you had the building boom, and now you've got the continuation of the great building boom, plus the place is just white hot. It's going to
white hot in what way? In way of tourism?
Yeah, 40 million tourists. All the hotels are setting records right now in profit and that sort of thing. And it's finally coming back from 9/11.
You know, they're trying to brand Denver, and maybe what they should say about Denver, what goes on in Denver stays in Denver. But maybe if it stays here because nobody wants it, I don't know. What goes on in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Well, that's supposedly, but I try to make sure that's not the case with my column.
Could you turn yourself into a kind of Edna Buchanan or Carl Hiaasen working the beat that you do in Vegas? What do you see? Are the things that you see that you really can't write about? Is it too dangerous to write about a lot of stuff?
I've written a book that's coming out next month, but the book I could write that would sell millions is the book you can't write. I mean, there's just with the internet, I get so much information and so much stuff that I can't write, and so much stuff that I get confirmed. And it's really it's just never been It's never been hotter. There's no such thing as a slow news day or slow news night, especially.
Does the mob still have a big presence in Vegas?
Interesting that you say that. They don't as far as the big properties, but I'm told that there are a number of major restaurants that are fronts for organized crime.
A friend of mine's father was one of the former friends. She died slain execution style. Susan Berman,
yes.
Dad, Davey Berman, was
yes.
a big figure in Las Vegas and was one of the, was it with Meyer Lansky or who was, no, not Meyer Lansky. It was some, who was the big guy who got Vegas going? But anyway, Davey Berman played a big role. Guys like Elvis used to sing in her birthday party when she was a little kid. And that, you know, the incarnation of Vegas was its own story.
Yeah. Yes, I remember that. I know a lady that's doing a book on the Susan Berman slaying. In fact, I think I read that there's a possible movie in the making on it.
Well, that's funny because she was about to be evicted from her place in Brentwood. She had really fallen on hard times, and her friend, real estate heir in New York, Durst, I think his last name was, the one who was cross-dressing.
Right.
Guilty of the murder of his neighbor. Remember that? They were good friends. His wife disappeared, and the thinking is that since that investigation was going to be reopened, he had something to do with
it. Yes, I've heard that story. I think that's the book that's coming out is going to touch upon that.
Where are people getting, you know, tell me the name of your book. What's the book going to be, and what's the title?
It is a top 10 list book, and it is 100 top 10 lists, but the title of it is 1,000 Naked Truths, Hot Spots, and Cool Stuff. And it's all over the map. It is best fine dining, best sushi, best pizza, best nightclubs, best places to get lucky, and I don't mean gambling. Most annoying lines that showgirls hear, most annoying lines that the gondoliers are asked.
Is all covering Vegas.
It's all covering Vegas. 100 top 10 lists.
What are the
all
most annoying
Vegas.
Lines that showgirls hear?
Are those eyelashes real? Among other things.
Eyelashes?
Right.
Those eyelashes made of silicone? I see.
Do you live in the hotel? Do you get to keep the furs? What time to get off? Not in that order.
Tell me about Vegas. Tell me what was eye-opening, what was most surprising to you about. Because there's another Vegas. I have friends who live there. It's a very, ordinary kind of living environment as opposed to the Strip. Are there sort of two Vegases?
There are two Vegases. There's the Strip and there is the off-strip, the suburban strip. Every time I'm in a cab, I always ask the cabbie, what's the craziest question you get, that sort of thing. And he said, I've been asked probably four or five times, when you're done with your shift, do you drive back to L.A.? People.
They think the cab drivers commute from Los Angeles?
That's right. And the other question he gets is, do you live in a hotel? You know, a lot of people think there is no other part of Vegas. It's just the Strip, and you live in a hotel.
I have been to Vegas many times, but not since it's in its most recent incarnation, where it's now little Europe or something.
Yeah.
More families coming in. How has this changed?
It's changed a lot because about 10 years ago, Las Vegas was reaching out to be family-friendly. And they realized that's not what Vegas is. Vegas went back to its roots, and you saw
It's edgier.
The motto that came out of it, you know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, came out about 2.5 years ago. And it'll probably be quoted for the next 50-100 years.
I have a cousin who's a former judge living in Vegas, as a matter of fact, and he says, and it's not, I know it's not true of Clark County, but there are counties in Nevada where prostitution is legal, but not in Clark County, not in where Vegas is. But he says, since prostitution is legal, the only people in jail are litter bugs.
Yeah, the jails are full, and it's just not litter bugs, but it's there's.
Is there that big grifter mentality still in the more corporate Vegas that we have come to see? Is there is it still that loose, edgy kind of quality?
I don't think.
There's still a mob presence. It's maybe a more sanitized mob presence.
Yeah, it's very corporate now. You know, right now. Actually, 2 weeks ago, MGM Mirage, the largest gaming company in Las Vegas, purchased Mandalay Bay. That gave it 75% of the Strip's major properties. So they're probably going to have trouble from a monopoly standpoint of getting that approved. They think they will. They think their lawyers can make that case. Just this week, Harrah's Entertainment just purchased Caesars Entertainment, or is trying to, made a bid for $9.4 billion, which is $2 billion more than the other one. And these are reputable companies and all. I'm not saying there's no mob presence, but I'll tell you a really funny story about it. When I thought I was being approached by the mob, I was at a Hall of Fame, Casino Hall of Fame event. They were putting inducting some people, and I saw three really hefty guys in black suits, like right off The Sopranos. And they were like looking at me, and I had just been there a couple months, and I thought, now if I've ever seen mob, that's mob. And a guy comes over with a big, you know, Jersey voice and says, hey, I just want to welcome you to town. The guys and I like what you're doing. My name's Steve Sciarippa. He is Steve Sciarippa of The Sopranos. And I know why he got the job. He looks like it. He talks like it. He walks like it.
I once, in the advertising business in Chicago, we had a client who used to come in after hours in black silk suits, and he had been, as he'd like to put it, the guest of the federal government for a few years, and was later found stuffed in the trunk of a car in Atlanta, Georgia. So, but I think they're probably working hard to avoid the stereotype. Maybe they're all dressing in Armani now, I think.
I'm sure that's true.
Gambling, since that's the theme of the show today. Gambling. Sure. Why do people do it in Vegas when you have virtually the odds are against you? And if you got lucky and learned how to, you know, do all the tricks, what is it, card reading and what do they call it, all the card counting, and all this other stuff where you really actually have some chance of winning something, they throw you out in a minute.
Was the question, why do people...
No. Talk to me about the gambling in Vegas. What are your odds of actually winning anything? You know?
I don't know what the actual odds are. They're not good. They're going to get your money eventually. I have a tremendous amount of high roller stories in my book and talk about...
Tell me a high roller. My dad, they used to comp him. And he used to say, in later years, he said, I'm going to Vegas to visit my money.
Yes.
And as it turned out, it was true.
Yes.
Sadly.
Favorite high roller story. Kerry Packer is a... Australian/New Zealand media mogul, one of the richest men in the world. He came in during 9/11. He flies in private plane, tries to only stay 2 days because he plays really big, plays $200,000 a hand, and plays three hands at a time of $200,000.
Poker.
And I'm sorry, I'm losing my voice here, but I.
Let me pour you a drink, dear.
He got.
What goes on at the press club stays at the press club.
He got in a little bit of. He got down a bit, and he was getting ready to leave. Then 9/11 hit, and the FAA grounded all flights. He had to stay there three more days.
The management must have been thrilled.
Management was thrilled. He lost $30 million. Now, this is the same Kerry Packer that came into the MGM about 6-7 years ago, won $18 to $20 million, and they've forever banned him from the property because he just screws up the bottom line so much on that. But during that $20 million hit, he's a little man who like eats hot dogs real grossly. I mean, he's just not a very well kept kind of guy. Yeah, and
Miss Manners is not citing him for her commendation.
Right, and there was a young cocktail server. He thanked her a couple times and threw $100 chips at her and maybe $1,000 chips, and finally he said, are you married? And she said, no, I'm single.
Not tonight, I'm not.
He said, you got any kids? She goes, I got a kid. He goes, you have a house? She goes, no, I don't. He goes, now you do. And he gave her
$150,000.
That's the largest tip that I know of. Ben Affleck also actually won $600,000 a couple of years ago at the Hard Rock and supposedly gave away over $120,000 tips to the dealers and that sort of thing. So... But can you win? Yes, you can win. But over time, they're going to get it back.
All right. So when a guy like Kerry Packer makes off with $20 million, they ban him? He did it fair and square?
He did it fair and square. They just felt that they can't absorb those kind of hits. messes just
but they didn't
up their
they didn't have a problem in absorbing the his $30 million loss,
no,
did they?
No.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Isn't,
yeah. So he goes to another MGM Mirage property, but just not that one.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is former Denver Rocky Mountain News gossip columnist Norm Clark. He's now the gossip columnist for the Las Vegas News Review. And we're talking, the theme of today's program is gambling. Talk to me about prostitution. Since it's not legal, why is it not legal in Clark County of all places when in fact it's legal in other counties in Nevada?
I don't know. I guess we've got our standards, you know. that is a really great question. I guess that some place they decided that you've got everything else in Vegas, you just got to draw the line there. But the most interesting issue that was raised.
Surely it flourishes, and I'm sure it flourishes at a very high level.
Yes.
You've got girls there
escort
that look
services.
Escort services, yeah. And alcohol massage, and
sex industry is alive and well, and never been going bigger in
they
Vegas.
They just avert their eyes when it comes to sex.
I think they. Turn, if you'll pardon the pun, they turn a blind eye to that for the most part. But Oscar Goodman, the mayor, who's the former mob attorney,
right.
about three, 4 months ago, raised a very interesting question. He didn't say he was for it, didn't say he was against it, but he threw it out there. He said, why don't we look at legalizing prostitution and have a district like Copenhagen and Amsterdam and those places? And there was a lot of hue and cry over it. I'm not sure it's the worst idea in the world.
I'm in favor of it. I think that Denver ought to have it. We already have a red light district in the state capital where you have more whores per capita than they probably do in Vegas. So I don't see why we can't do it in a legitimate way. They tax them like the bunny ranches. You know, I did a show in California, and sometimes when we were talking about prostitution, Joycelyn Elder, former Surgeon Sturgeon General, said, hey, actors sell their bodies, models sell their bodies. If it's a consenting adult, you want to sell your body for sex, you don't have a problem with it. So we had a lot of calls from the girls who work in the bunny ranches talking about how it works for them, how they like it. It seems to it's not going to be my thing, but they like it. The doctors come in. They get taxed. So, you know, the municipalities make some money. Disease rate is kept down, and everybody's happy.
Yeah, I agree. I have a great hooker story.
Please.
It's clean.
Please.
My brother is a photographer at the Review Journal where I work, and he's the chief photographer. And he went in to take a picture at a money-changing place. And they said to him, you should have been here 15 minutes ago. We just had a meltdown. A hooker just had a meltdown. And he said, why is that? And she goes, she came in here, and she opened her purse, and she pulled out all these wads of bills and threw them out there, and they gave her back about $98. And she said, what is this? And they said, that's $98. And she said, no, he told me that it was $2,500, and he was an Oriental who gave her Oriental money that was only worth his. So
I'm sure
her yen for the business.
A yen for the business, did you say?
Yes. Cooled off a little bit after that.
What is some of the stuff? Don't name names. Don't get yourself into trouble. But stories that you really couldn't talk about that are very juicy kinds of stories. Can you give us the outline of some
a lot
of those stories?
A number of what happens with Las Vegas has been such a draw for the celebrity crowd from Hollywood. It's coming in record numbers. And with the record numbers, we're getting, you know, crazy stories of one that was seen wandering naked through the lobby of, not the lobby, but a corridor of a five-star hotel.
A girl or a boy?
A guy. We've seen, you know, we've got cases of a famous NFL Hall of Fame football player was overdosed and with somebody very underage, type of things that's not in there. Not that things that don't make the newspaper because the properties don't want that sort of thing out there.
Do you believe these stories?
Yeah, I've had the security guards tell me about these stories. I about a month ago.
Can you use them, or is there pressure on you not to use them, even when you can verify?
I've never had the pressure, but I'm sure if I had a steady diet of hooker and drug stories, I'm sure that I'd probably they wouldn't cut off you know, credentials or things like that. But
they make it harder for you.
They wouldn't be as available to me.
What does it do to you, Norm Clark, to live in the Vegas environment? How does it change people to be in that environment? Very different environment than Denver, or is it not that different?
For what I do, it's not that much different, and that probably sounds really crazy. But when I was in Denver, I wasn't as hooked up to the internet as I am now. I work out of my house. I get internet. I get internet tips from left and right. I had four or five this morning before I came over. The biggest difference is the previous job at the Rocky, I worked days, but then I would go out, lived in Lodo, I would go out and call it prowling or whatever you want, but mm-hmm. I was looking for material, mm-hmm. talk to the restaurateurs, talk to the waitresses, that sort of thing, to see what's going on, what was happening, and I still pretty much do the same thing. But the difference is the people I'm talking to in Las Vegas have just gotten off the phone with Ben Affleck and J-Lo, and they're coming in, or Adrian Brody, I broke the Britney Spears story last January.
That's right, you did break that story. Where? How did you get that? Somebody called you with a hot, I mean, does that come from a security, a hotel, somebody who performed the wedding ceremony?
This was the most amazing tip I've ever got. My cell phone rang, I looked at it, and it had Nebraska area code on it. And I'm thinking, who's calling me from Nebraska? And
was it late at night?
No, it was 5 o'clock in the afternoon, the day of the wedding. She got married at 5 a.m. It's now 12 hours later.
Mm-hmm.
And it's somebody that said, hey, Norm, are you aware that Britney Spears got married to George Maloof? And he's the owner of the Palms. And so I was sure it was a prank. And I said, yeah, we got it. We're running it on page one tomorrow. He goes, you got it? And I go, yeah, I got it. Thanks a million. I knew it was somebody was putting me on. So I called Maloof. He's one of the people that I am in contact with on a regular basis, and called him on the cell phone. I said, George, I thought you might want to comment on this. I just got a hot tip that you just married Britney Spears. Can you get back to me right away? And 30 seconds later, the phone rang, and he goes, Norm, she got married. I go, what? He goes, she got married. Not to me. She got married today, but we're getting her out of it. And it was the most mind-blowing 24 hours of journalism I've been involved in a long, long time.
So you break it immediately.
Yeah.
You run with it. And then what happens? The whole media world...
Hit the Drudge Report, and we, the Drudge Report had a million hits on it within a couple hours.
When he said we're getting her out of it, what was his relationship? What's his relationship with Britney Spears? Does he handle her management in some way?
No, he's the owner of the Palms, and the Palms is this hip hotel where all of Hollywood comes, and she had come and done a free concert there in their nightclub, which holds 1,500. It's the hottest nightclub in Las Vegas.
Why would she do a free concert for a charity or something?
No, it was that she had a CD coming out, and she wanted to, do something kind of crazy. Instead of doing it in L.A., she wanted to do it in Las Vegas in front of...
Well, now she's getting married again.
Crazy. Yeah, I have to tell you a funny story. The night that the night of New Year's Eve, I was up on the deck at the Palms. It's 55 stories, and I'm looking at the panorama, and they're getting ready to do the $500,000 fireworks display. My girlfriend turns to me and says, there's Britney dancing, 5 feet away. And so, three days later, she gets married. George Maloof tells me, he says, by the way, Britney saw you up on the deck the other night. She comes running to me and says, George, that gossip columnist is out there. And he said, yeah, I invited him. He's a good guy. Don't worry about it. And she goes, well, tell him to be nice to me. As though she must have had this wacky 5-minute marriage in mind, even then.
Well, it's 4 minutes longer than a lot of marriages last. So.
That's right.
Norm Clark, it has been a great pleasure to meet you finally after hearing about you for so long.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for joining us. And the name of your book coming out next month?
1,000 Naked Truths. And we're coming back in September for a book signing, and we'll have that.
Well, maybe you can come and join us then. Will you be at Tatter Cover?
I'm going to be talking to Joyce, and we'll be talking to some various people and see what we can get
Let
set up.
Let us know. We'd love to have you back.
Thank
Thanks so much. Sure, great to be back.
I'm Ina Goldstein. You're listening to the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. Come and join us for lunch. You don't have to be a member to do it. And this is AM 1150 KNRC.
Rush, rush.
Anyone else has to go, do it now. I ain't stopping again.
Middays, the Rush Alternative. Enid Goldstein, noon till 3 on AM 1150 KNRC.
I'm Jonathan Anton, owner of Jonathan Salon, which can be seen on Bravo's reality show, Blowout. I'm also the owner of a line of styling products with simple names like Clean, Cleaner, Soft, and Softer, which is only fitting since tracking the expenses that go into producing them has become pretty simple itself.
With Open, the Small Business Network, Jonathan Anton has the tools to make big things happen. You can too, when you have an American Express business card. To apply, call 1-800-NOW-OPEN.
I stopped at a salon to pick up shampoo, and this bottle said, for normal hair. Normal hair? What do they mean by normal? I don't know what normal is anymore. I've been trying to sell my house.
If you're looking to sell your house, relax. Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage knows your neighborhood. We consider all of your property's merits, not just location and square footage, to get you the right price. Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage. Visit ColoradoHomes.com. Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage is owned and operated by NRT Incorporated.
Talk to Doug Kellett.
Well, let's talk a little bit about John Edwards, because I know some of you are so giddy about the fact that John Kerry, by email today, which is something unusual, something new, named John Edwards as his vice presidential candidate. The thing that occurred to me at the beginning and still kind of rolls through my head is the old song, The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia, where it says, don't trust your soul to an old backwoods southern lawyer. Because that's what John Edwards is.
Doug Kellett, weekdays from 3 to 6 on AM 1150 KNRC.
I'm Sue Herrera, CNBC Business Radio. Stocks are mixed at this hour. The Dow is up just about 9 points. The NASDAQ is down better than 16. A shameful day, in her words, for Martha Stewart, but a lucrative one for shareholders in her company. Shares of Martha Stewart Living OmniMedia are up 30% after she received a relatively lenient 5 months in prison and 5 months of home confinement for lying to federal authorities. Stewart's co-defendant, her former stockbroker, Peter Bukanovic, will be sentenced momentarily for his role in the sale of ImClone stock. A modest increase last month in consumer prices, just half the spike we saw in May, which was due to the soaring cost of gasoline. Today's Labor Department report is calming any residual inflation fears. Ford is recalling nearly 900,000 Taurus and Mercury Sable sedans to fix a problem with their front springs. The vehicles were registered in cold weather states where winter driving could cause those springs to rust and puncture a tire. Sue Herrera, CNBC Business Radio.
The Chicago Underground Daily calls it an amazing cinematic wonder, spellbinding.
My daughter, I'm not sure if I can make it.
Father, you must remain strong, for I bring good news.
Oh, you bring good news?
Yes, I just save a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
Okay, here you go. The perfect house. So you ready to put in a bid?
A what?
It's a pretty tight market, and I'd really hate to see you lose out.
It's the first house you've shown us.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Not working with the Century 21 agent. Century 21 agents pledge to keep showing you properties until you're satisfied. Only Century 21 agents offer the Century 21 Service Pledge to help reduce the stress of buying real estate. Century21.com. Real estate for your world.
The Century 21 Pledge is offered by participating offices. Each office is independently owned and operated.
While Rush is telling you just what he thinks, Enid Goldstein will find out what you think. What you think. Hear the Rush Alternative. Weekdays at noon on AM 1150 KNRC. KNRC.
Hi, I'm Doug Kellett. Join me weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now back to Enid Goldstein.
12:33 on the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. We're on Glen Arm between 13th and 14th. Come down and join us for lunch today. You don't have to be a member to do it. And I'm having the most wonderful sandwich in between guests. The food is good. And the theme this month is gambling. And joining us now is Gary Eklund of ESPN and Nancy Clark, who holds a high position here at the Denver Press Club, and Dina Pastorini, who is a realtor. And these are two women who are behind getting poker for women started at the press club, because men have been playing poker here forever. And I guess the mandate here is to teach me a dope, comma, a dope, comma, well, how to play poker. So, Gary, you have your work cut out for you.
Anybody can learn. Well, Texas Hold'em is just a unique game.
Okay.
What you do is everybody gets a few cards. You get two cards down.
Okay.
And then we have what's known as the flop. And we flip three cards over. Then we have the turn and the river. And what happens is those five cards are your hand plus the two cards in your hand. You can use two in your hand and any on the board, one in your hand and four on the board, or you can use the whole board.
To better your hand.
To better your hand.
But you have to know what a good hand is.
So you have to know what a good hand is.
Well, we don't know.
So I'm going to just deal it out really quick here.
Okay. And, where can we hear your radio program?
I'm on ESPN at 12 o'clock on Saturdays and 11 o'clock on Sundays.
Okay.
So what would happen is everybody look at your cards, and depending on what you think you have, you can bet now. And then and you have blinds and kind of an ante type of thing, but we'll go through this
well,
quick.
Why would I want to bet?
Well, because you don't know what you can have. You have a high card.
I have a queen. What am I betting on? That I'm going to have more cards, or my cards are higher than anybody else's?
Right, you're going to have a pair of queens, you're going to have a straight, or you're going to have a flush or something like that. So then you burn a card, and you...
All right, so he's dealing now...
A 9, 10 jack, and you have a queen, so you have a possible straight.
Those are my cards?
Yeah, these are your cards
and you have a
possible flush and a possible straight. So then you burn another card,
okay,
and you flip over a card, and there's an ace.
There's
good,
an ace.
Good
so
card.
And all this 10, time, we'd all be jack, betting. Queen, ace.
Okay. All this time, we'd be betting.
Would you see that? Would you see my cards?
No, we wouldn't see your cards, but we see the with
see
the
those.
Table.
Okay, yeah,
those
so,
are typical.
And I'm betting. And I'm betting that I'm going to do good.
Right. Ooh, there's another ace. Look at that. That's just unbelievable. So you'd bet now. You got
I'll
a pair of aces.
I'm going to bet everything.
You bet everything. Okay, you bet everything. What are
all
you
right,
going
to? How much do I have here to bet?
Oh, you've got $1,800.
I'll see you in Argentina.
Okay, so Nancy's going to say so. So you throw down your cards and we see what everybody has. You've got queen high with a pair of aces. Nancy has a flush of clubs. Very good. That probably should win. You have a flush of clubs and yours is higher because her eight beats her seven.
Oh, okay.
But I think I got you. I got four aces.
Four aces? Oh, wow. Oh, no, I've lost everything.
So the real clue here is
you're going to have to move into the press club.
The real clue here is make sure you see the guy shuffle before he deals.
Yeah. Oh, he took everything. It's gone.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Talk to me about what you guys have instituted. You even have a website called Poker and the City. Women playing poker at the press club once a month, even if you don't know how to do it. Do you have to be a member of the press club in order to be able to come in?
You can come to the first time as a guest. After that, you do have to be a member.
And, all right.
We're gambling for money and prizes.
And prizes, and some of it goes to charity?
Yes,
and charity?
Goes to the gathering place. One chip out of each hand goes to the gathering place. And we've been donating quite several.
And the gathering place, for people who don't know?
It helps women and children in distress, and they're at 15th and High in Denver.
Okay. So once a month, you pay $50. You come in, and what do you get for your $50? You get instruction?
Well, yeah, I'll give you instruction if they don't know how to play. I bring in two or three dealers. Because I've got poker tournaments all over town in different restaurants. So I bring in some of our dealers, and we'll teach you how to play if you don't know how to play. We read the hand. So even if you think you would have lost and you had a pair of queens and you actually had a flush, we'd read the hands for you. So it's not that cutthroat. But the gathering place has just been great. Nancy's just done a tremendous job to get this many people out to play. And it's kind of fun, and it's not bad sitting around with, 40 or 50 women.
How many come to the press in our dreams? 40 or 50 come? Really?
Yeah, we
did. Did you start this too? You helped to get this going? Was this your idea?
Yeah, well, I was here one night for a book signing, and they were talking about the history of the press club, and that it actually started with some journalists who started playing poker in 1877, some guys. And they've been
some
playing.
Of them are still down in the basement.
I think they might be. But and a few of their ghosts are there for sure.
Yeah.
But,
it's kind of a pit down
they've
there.
Been playing,
it's beautiful up here, but kind of a pit
they've
down
been playing
there.
Every week since then, so I'm sitting there going, hey, what's wrong with that story? What about the women? Why aren't we playing?
And Dina loves to play. Believe me, she, no matter how bad her hand is, she'll play. She'll stay in.
The bitter end.
The bitter end. She will not get out.
Which is, you'd love it. And it's part of the fun is the fact that the networking with women, because they're all from different industries,
very high-powered women and people that are really enthused about getting together and networking. And then the game. And Coach said it best when he said, it's not about your cards, it's about your poker face.
That's right. Yeah.
So you really have to have a – you can't reveal anything.
No. You because a lot of times if there's only two or three people left out of six or seven people at the table, you may not have the strongest hand. But if you bet stronger, they may think you have the strongest hand, fold, you win the pot anyhow. So a lot of it doesn't have to
so
do
with strategy. It's really strategy. What can you learn about people by the way they play cards? Can you tell if somebody's got who's brave? Can you tell people who fold too quickly?
You can tell people who are aggressive.
Who are aggressive?
Yeah, you know, somebody, I'll bet a dollar, I'll bet 20.
Right.
You know, but I've learned a lot. Most of the women playing here, and I've learned this. Fortunately, I'm not playing against them. Women tend to bluff a whole heck of a lot better than men do.
Well, they've had to deal with it. Are you kidding? They've had to say, was it good for you? Oh, it was great. This is centuries.
So that's why they light
sure
up a,
it was.
That's why they light up a cigarette after they win a hand. I understand it now. I got it now. But no, you learn a lot out about people. You learn who's not afraid to take chances, who's aggressive in things. And I think a lot of it turns over to their business.
How can you be a better poker player? Or a card player in general. I think it's a skill that probably translates into life, being a better negotiator, really.
Well, I think a lot of it learns to what's called tells. If Nancy, every time she has a good hand, she rubs her eyebrow, she may not notice that, but somebody else might notice that. Or like Dina, if she has a good hand and she goes, oh, yeah, you know, a lot of times that's a tell.
That's a bluff. You know, that means that you don't have a good
exactly.
hand, right?
You never know. So a lot of it, you know, there's things like... body posture.
Uh-huh.
Supposedly, if you're all in and you fold your hands back and sit back in your chair, you have a very good hand. I had a friend of mine in Santa Barbara I played with that he used to rub his nose when he had a good hand. That guy never beat me. And he never knew why, because I'd bluff and I'd beat him. And
he never realized he was revealing his hand by doing that.
He scratched his nose. So I try to sit on my hands when I play and just look straight ahead. And that's why if you saw... A lot of guys like Chris Moneymaker, who won the World Series, wear sunglasses because they don't want to see your eyes. They don't want to see. A lot of people blink quicker if they have a good hand.
Oh, you know, if they had those Saudi Arabian women, I just got back from Italy on Saturday, and a whole contingent of them got on the transatlantic flight, and I thought, oh, my God, I don't know. Are we going to make it? They were dressed head to toe in burqa, you know, with Darth Vader, like, slits over their eyes, and that's a perfect poker outfit.
Yeah.
All right, when is the next poker game at the Press Club?
August 11th, 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock. Be there, be square. $50.
And includes
dinner,
two glasses of wine,
$15
in chips. You can buy up with the chips. And four or five prizes that have nothing to do with poker ability.
Right.
No, I've been trying to draw the Botox prize for weeks.
Yeah, I was going
to
say important prizes like Botox.
It just hasn't come yet. I don't know why. I had like 11 cards in there the other night, but no, I didn't get it.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Gary Eklund of ESPN and Nancy Clark and Dina Pastorini, thank you. This has been lots of fun, and I'm still a novice, but I hope to get better.
Well, come out for the next party.
All right. I might do that.
Thank you.
I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live. We're talking about gambling, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. You are listening to AM 1150 KNRC.
Award-winning news and entertaining talk. This is AM 1150 KNRC.
12:42, time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Enid. Cloudy and 73 degrees now. A man who threatened a rape victim is going to prison. I'll have that story in a moment. First, let's check traffic. Here's Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
Still big problems trying to get into the high country at this hour. The report of service of Carfax. The big problem is in the form of an overturned SUV that was towing a trailer westbound I-70 at the Chief Hosa exit. Traffic jam back to Lookout Mountain Road. That's about a 3-mile stretch in there. Trying to get that vehicle back up on its wheels, but it's going to take a while for everything to sort itself out there. 38th and Fox, watch for an accident. 38th Street and Brighton Boulevard, watch for another one. Don't get stuck buying the lemon that broke down this morning. Ask your dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report, now with the buyback guarantee, or visit Carfax.com for details. Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
23-year-old William Roach of Davenport, Iowa, has been sentenced to 4 months in a federal prison camp. He used the telephone to threaten the life of a woman who has accused Kobe Bryant of raping her. In addition to prison time, Roach has been slapped with a $1,000 fine. This report brought to you by Pier 1. Boulder and Thornton have now passed the 100,000 population mark. It came as good news to officials in Thornton, but those in Boulder are concerned, saying the growth brings more responsibility to provide affordable housing. The Denver metro area now has 8 cities with populations of 100,000 or more. Overall, the metro area grew 1.6% last year compared to 3.8% in the last half of the 90s. Colorado's last private airport is shut down. Aurora Air Park, built in 1944, has closed because of a lack of funds. At one time, more than 100 planes were housed at the airport, but yesterday only one sat on the runway. New homes will be built where the tarmac now sits. Pier 1, it's grand and it's open. Check out the new Pier 1 in Belmar Shopping Center off of Wadsworth Boulevard in Alameda in Lakewood. While you're there, save big at Pier 1's one big sale and clearance up to 50% off. We'll take a look at the KNRC weather forecast next. KNRC News Time is 1244.
More In It Live.
And it's not the same for men.
Talking just gets you into trouble.
Next on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, I'm Evelinda Irvin.
And I'm Judy Schwartz. We co-host Style Matters Live.
Even if you're not born with great style, you can buy it.
Just like we do. And this extends to our homes. Element, Denver's newest furniture store for urban home furnishings, accessories, and artwork, meets all our style needs and will meet yours, too.
Element has multifunctional furniture to maximize your space in a condo, apartment, loft, or smaller home. The clean lines of Element's furniture for today's urban lifestyle will work with what you already own.
You'll love their eclectic mix of styles, all presented in a way you can envision in your own home.
Prices are affordable, with lamps as low as $100 and sofas starting at about $1,000. Interior design services are available.
Element is open Monday through Friday, 11 to 6, Saturday, 10 to 7, and Sunday, 1 to 5. Element is located at 77 West 9th Avenue, a half a block west of Broadway in the Golden Triangle. 303-825-3770.
Element. Your lifestyle, your home, your element.
Checking the KNRC weather forecast, mostly cloudy skies for some scattered showers and thunderstorms, maybe some heavy rain as well through the afternoon into the evening hours. After midnight, we'll see some patchy fog and partly cloudy skies, upper 50s for tonight's low. Mostly sunny to start the day tomorrow, partly cloudy later on, maybe some afternoon thunderstorms. Mid-80s is where we'll top out tomorrow. Cloudy and 73 now, KNRC News Time is 1246. I'm Tim McLaughlin, our next news at 1 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, I'm Evelinda Ehrman.
And I'm Judy Schwartz. We co-host Style Matters Live on Saturday mornings.
We love to shop and want to share some fashion tips with you, courtesy of Colorado Mills, the great shopping center at Colfax and Indiana Avenue in Lakewood. With its mix of retail and outlet stores, you'll find everything your little heart desires.
Here's a tip. Want to look taller and thinner? The answer is monochromatic or one-color dressing. Dress yourself in one color and you will look 10 pounds lighter and a few inches taller.
You don't even have to match the colors exactly. Color tones and texture variations work well, too. Stop by Colorado Mills this week and check out their monochromatic outfits at stores such as Ann Taylor Loft, Cashel Corner Annex, and Chico's.
This Style Matters fashion moment is brought to you by Colorado Mills. Just 15 minutes from downtown at Colfax and Indiana Avenues in Lakewood at Denver West. Check out ColoradoMills.com for store hours and great deals.
This is Evelyn and Judy from Style Matters Live saying visit Colorado Mills where great shopping lives.
I'm Philip. I work in IT.
You think you know me?
You think you know what it's like sitting in traffic at I-25 in Hampton with the AC broken and my Doug Kellett show getting walked all over by some punk kid subwoofer?
Doug Kellett's weekdays from 3 to 6 on AM 1150 KNRC. More talk time than any other Denver talk radio station. More talk, less clutter. Now, here's Enid Goldstein.
1247 on the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. The theme of this month's show at the Denver Press Club, gambling. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, and joining me in this segment is Deb Frazier, who is a reporter for the Rocky Mountain News, and she's done a lot of reporting on Indian casinos. Deb, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Enid, for having me.
Talk to me about Indian casinos. We don't have any in Denver. We have, what, just two in the whole state of Colorado?
Correct.
Which is not very many, is it? I lived in California for a long time, so we seem to have a lot of Indian casinos in California.
Yes, and if certainly the governor has his way, there will be no more Indian casinos in Colorado.
Are they a good thing?
Depends how you look at it. As this deal, as this proposal is currently structured, it would be a good thing because it would provide $1 billion in tax money to the state. Normally, Indian casinos do not pay taxes. And this was part of the carrot that the proponents of the Cheyenne and Arapaho homecoming casino would to sort of... make it the deal more palatable.
Okay, but here, so explain to people who don't know, what is the deal? You have a couple of tribes who want to have a casino where?
Out near Denver International Airport. Currently, the site has not been disclosed. The deal is that was part of their traditional homelands, 27 million acres.
So if we give them some of their traditional homeland back, they'll give us some $1 billion in taxes?
No.
Roughly, something like
they
that?
Will buy 500 acres. And they will agree to pay taxes on whatever revenues there are at the casino.
So they'll pay 500 acres at the going rate, whatever that is, whatever they negotiate, and then they will pay taxes on the revenues.
Correct.
Okay. And why does Governor Owens not want this?
He doesn't like casinos. A lot of lawmakers in Colorado.
He's so busy with family values, and we hope keeping his zipper zipped up. What does he care about casinos?
Well, you know, he may be spending a lot of time in other states that do have a lot of Indian casinos.
Well, I could. You know what? Let me say something. I've been to Black Hawk, and Central City, whatever they call it. It's horrible. It is the most depressing. It is so depressing to walk into those casinos, first of all, and watch people get carpal tunnel syndrome doing the machines. And the smoke, it's impossible even to breathe. You'd think that they would have high-level exhaust systems in those places, and maybe they do, but it still doesn't handle the smoke. And to me, it's really depressing. I think if you're going to gamble, you might as well gamble with something that you have a chance of winning, and you don't have a chance of winning in these gambling casinos. You really, the odds are always in favor of the house.
And people keep going, and in fact, people are going in record numbers, as Norm Clark mentioned.
Right. Well, they're coming to Vegas in record numbers. But are they also coming to Central City in record numbers?
No. But Central City and Black Hawk, even after the new highway is built that goes directly into Central City, it's a long drive. The in real estate, the deal is always location, location, location. You couldn't possibly get a better location than right near the airport. There are people who will fly anywhere to go to a high-quality casino. I have relatives in Hawaii. Most of the local Hawaiians, their vacation when they live in one of the most beautiful places in the world is Las Vegas.
I know, it's really, where they always had double sets of drapes on the windows. They didn't want you to know if it was day or night. There were never a clock around, and this was more, not so much recently, but in the past. So, the governor doesn't want it. And he's not going to be the governor forever anyway, and they'll keep reframing the proposal until finally one day it probably succeeds, do you think?
The truth of the matter is...
Because we're broke as a state, we're broke in Denver.
The truth of the matter is they don't need the governor's approval. Indian land claims and Indian issues are the sole province of the federal government. This particular deal by Council Tree and Steve Hillard went to the governor saying, this is what you'll get, this is what we'll do, and you'll avoid years of litigation that you could easily lose.
So what's going to happen?
Could be, he has a carrot and a stick approach, and the governor is not interested, the state is not interested. They're talking to the Interior Department. There have been a number of very significant decisions in favor of Indian claims, Maine, Michigan, New York, California, where the states have lost and have lost any kind of positive incentive such as taxes, and they've also had to pay part of the settlement.
So in other words, it's conceivable that you will have Indian gaming near the airport, and if Owens doesn't take this deal that gives him $1 billion, projects him about $1 billion in taxes a year, they could still institute the casino and give him nothing. Give the state
that
of Colorado
correct.
Zero.
Correct.
But he's still not going to go for it. Owens is still not going to go. What does it do when you have so much... in some ways I think gambling is benign, I guess, because I'm not addicted to it, and I'm not a part of a family where, maybe I shouldn't say it quite like that, but, I know that people, it has wreaked a lot of havoc in lives where people are very addicted to gambling, and they throw everything away for the fun in quotes, of gambling. But in some ways, to me, it seems benign. If it's what you want to do, fine. But what does it do to a population? Does it have, what's the downside? If addiction, you know, if you take addiction out of the equation, what does it do to a population? Anything, one way or another? Does it matter?
It's another form of entertainment. It doesn't happen to be my cup of tea, but it's certainly going on. Las Vegas is, although it's Nevada is controlled by Mormons, I mean, they don't have any problem with it. It makes money. And not my choice of recreation, but people do it. And the money's going to be spent, you know, whether it's the Colorado Lottery or Powerball. And this is just another outlet of it, except for the fact that the money from this will help two very poor tribes that were exiled from Colorado because they were always resettled on land that some of the soldiers found a use for.
All right. When they've looked at lottery winners, people have won zillions of dollars in a lottery, and they look at them 5 or 10 years later. Sometimes these people have gotten into way more trouble. It has not been a boon in their lives, and sometimes it has. In the Indian tribes, where gaming has come in and taken formerly poor tribes and made them a lot richer, any statistics, any information that you can share with us?
For instance, the Southern Utes, they have a casino, and it has funded a lot of other tribal enterprises. They're now one of the most successful tribes in the country. They have a huge investment portfolio, and the way they use it is not just by giving individual Indians money, but they start businesses on that reservation that employs Indian people, and that's the gift that keeps on giving.
Deb Fraser, reporter for the Rocky Mountain News, thank you so much. It's interesting to hear. When are we going to know more about the Indian casinos and the DIA situation? What's next on that story?
They're proceeding, the proponents of it are proceeding in Washington, not with any kind of rider, but to work with the Department of Interior to try and work out a deal so it doesn't go to litigation. And the federal government has been interested in that because they've lost big time.
So it looks like it's going to happen. One way or another, it's eventually going to happen, it sounds like.
You know, you put 21 Indian attorneys who are specialists in Indian claim courses, cases in a room, and you'll get 26 different opinions plus a million amicus briefs. I don't know.
Well, we'll be sitting on the edge of our seats waiting for your next report on the subject. Thank you so much for joining us today. Deb Fraser, reporter for the Rocky Mountain News. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club on AM 1150 KNRC.
Libs love her.
True love is the greatest thing in the world.
Conservatives hate her.
Ignoramus.
We have absolutely nothing in common.
And we all know her. Enid Goldstein on AM 1150 KNRC.
Break free from Quest with your new choice in local phone service. Liberty Bell Telecom. Better service, cheaper rates. Keep your current numbers. LibertyBellTelecom.com.
I went to turn off my computer last night, and a window came up asking if I was sure I wanted to shut down.
Am I sure? How can I be sure about anything when I'm trying to sell my house?
If you're looking to sell your house, Coldwell Banker can ease your mind. Our extensive online exposure means your home gets shown through award-winning local and national websites. Coldwell Banker. Visit ColdwellBanker.com.
All offices independently owned and operated, except offices owned and operated by Energy Incorporated.
Supporting those involved in serving and protecting our country has never been more important. The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is to ensure our veterans receive the medical care and rehabilitation to which they're entitled, to provide programs that strengthen bodies and stimulate minds, to ensure access to housing, education, and transportation. To find out how you can support our nation's paralyzed veterans, call 1-866-USA-4PVA. That's 1-866-USA-4PVA.
AutoTrader.com has the largest selection of used cars in Denver, and comparison tools make it easy to find the one you really want. AutoTrader.com, your car is waiting.
Talk to Bill O'Reilly.
Liberal people are not Michael Moore. All right, liberal people are not Stuart Smalley. Those aren't liberal people. So we have to define what we're talking about here. Liberal people are basically Americans who see problem solving from a point of view that says we have an obligation to help every American, except the conservatives.
Bill O'Reilly, weekday mornings from 10 till noon on AM 1150 KNRC. We're in touch, so you be in touch. Call us with your news tips, traffic info, and when the weather's bad. 303-382-1150. Help out your neighbors by letting us know the situation in your area. We're the only locally owned Denver radio station, and we're concerned about Denver, the mountains, and the Front Range. AM 1150, KNIC.
Lionel, would you join me every weeknight from 9 to midnight here on AM 1150 KNRC?
Now back to Enid Goldstein.
1258 on the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, and we're coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. And on our Press Club shows, you don't have to be a member to come in and have lunch, and the food is really good. And I've been trying to scarf some down in between guests and eating way too much of it, as a matter of fact, but it's awfully good. We have two more hours of Enid Live coming up right here. The theme of the show today is gambling. And later in the broadcast, we're going to be joined by novelist Walter Mosley. If you read the papers today, he was all over both of them because he's going to be at a Tattered Cover, Cherry Creek tonight at 7:30. He writes the E.Z. Rollins series of mysteries, among others. And they're really wonderful to read. I've read a number of them, and so he's one of my favorites. And I first learned about him because he was a favorite of Bill Clinton. So really, thank you notes to Bill Clinton for helping to make Walter Mosley's reputation. He'll be joining us later in the broadcast, as will Gil Asakawa from the Denver Post, and lots of other guests as we look at gambling and gaming in the area. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to AM 1150 KNRC, the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club.
Hear Colorado talk. This is Colorado's locally owned and operated AM 1150 KNRC, Englewood, Denver's premier talk station.
KNRC News Time, 1 o'clock.
NBC News Radio, I'm Robert Hager. The sentence for domestic diva Martha Stewart, 5 months in prison, 2 years probation, and a $30,000 fine. MSNBC's Dan Abrams was in the New York City courtroom when the decision was read.
She stared straight ahead throughout the time the judge was speaking to her. She stared straight ahead as the judge was talking about the sentence.
She later said she's not afraid and is grateful so many people support her. Her case will be appealed. One crew chief near Carson City, Nevada, says he thinks a wildfire has done its worst. It burned at least 14 homes and forced hundreds of people to evacuate. Flames from the big blaze have been shooting 100 feet into the sky. And officials in Las Vegas say a new downtown monorail is attracting tens of thousands of riders, as many as 50,000 a day expected, making it easier now to rush from casino to casino to win money or lose it. I'm Robert Hager, NBC News Radio.
There's a special place you go for painting and decorating, your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. And during cool summer savings, you'll find special deals, too. Right now, save $7 a gallon on Super Paint interior and exterior, our best-selling paints. So stop in for great service, expert advice, and right now, one cool sale. When it comes to paint and wallpaper, it's what we do, it's all we do. Ask how? Ask now. Ask Sherwin-Williams. For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com.
Thinking about buying a used vehicle from a private owner? Think about this. Every Ford Quality Check certified pre-owned vehicle has to pass a rigorous 115-point inspection. The ones that do qualify come with 6 years, 75,000-mile powertrain, limited warranty coverage, and 24-hour roadside assistance. Think you'll get a 3.9% interest rate from a private owner? I don't think so. If we don't certify it, it's just used. Then all buyers will qualify for Ford credit financing. Take delivery from dealer stock by September 30th, 04. See dealer for warranty details or visit FordCPO.com.
Winner of 8 Associated Press Awards for journalistic excellence, including Best Newscast, award-winning news and entertaining talk. This is Denver's AM 1150 KNRC.
Good afternoon. Cloudy, 73 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin, KNRC News. A prison sentence today for a man who threatened Kobe Bryant's accuser. I'll have that story in a moment. First, let's check traffic. Here's Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
Much better news for those of you trying to get to the high country this afternoon. Quest Choice Business has the good news. All of the lanes of traffic are cleared westbound I-70 at the Chief Hosa exit. We had an earlier rollover accident involving an SUV that caused a 3-mile traffic jam. CDOT tells us to expect some minor delays in there as that jam unsorts itself. Here in town, we're moving along in good shape according to the CDOT map. One minor accident off the freeways, it's at 18th and York. Quest Choice Business, your business line, plus any five features for just $39.99 a month. More than 100,000 small businesses already have signed up for Quest Choice Business. Shouldn't you? Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
4 months in a federal prison camp, that's the sentence for 23-year-old William Roach of Davenport, Iowa, who used the telephone to threaten the life of the woman accusing Kobe Bryant of rape. Outside Denver federal court, prosecutor Jim Allison said he was pleased with the sentence.
The federal guidelines require a sentence between 0 and 6 months. The defendant received a serious sentence of 4 months, and we feel that that, under the guideline situation we have, is good.
Roach's call last July 27th was initially heard by the alleged victim's father, who himself called the FBI. The father and the alleged victim's mother were in the courtroom today for the sentencing, which also includes a $1,000 fine. Roach must report to the South Dakota prison camp by August 16th. As for the Bryant case, it's scheduled to go to trial August 27th in Eagle. This report brought to you by Carfax. According to a report from the Public Safety Review Commission, the number of incidents of racial profiling in the metro area are on the rise. Denver has had more than 100 complaints so far this year, while Jefferson County has had 55. Commissioners heard from citizens last night during a public hearing to discuss how to increase trust between police officers and the public. A Fort Collins soldier is no longer facing charges of cowardice. Sergeant George Andreas Pagani was charged with cowardice last October after refusing to fight in Iraq. Pagani says he panicked when he saw the mangled body of an Iraqi man. He had only been in the war zone for 2 days. A doctor says Pagani suffers from damage to his balance system that may have been caused by an anti-malaria drug given to some troops serving in Iraq. Hallucinations and panic attacks are known side effects of that drug. In sports, the Colorado Rockies and San Francisco Giants play the second of four tonight at Coors Field. Sean Estes climbs the hill for the Rocks, who lost 7-5 to the Giants last night. Were you delayed because of an accident today? Don't buy that car. Ask your dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report now with a buyback guarantee, or visit carfax.com for details. Your exclusive Weather Channel forecast is next. KNRC News Time is 105.
Info.
What's up?
The scoop.
The latest.
What do you know?
What's new?
Listen and we'll tell you. Hear Colorado talk. AM 1150, KNRC.
Hi, I'm Judy Schwartz.
And I'm Evelinda Ehrman. We co-host Style Matters Live on Saturday morning.
You can count on us to find the best hidden shopping gems in Denver.
And two of the best shopping treasures are the Perfect Petal and Posh, across the street from each other in the Highland neighborhood.
The Perfect Petal is a contemporary botanical boutique. This season, they're carrying the hot floral trend. Big, bold flowers in citrus colors or giant orchid stems. For your backyard, don't miss their glass-blown bird feeders and handmade torches.
Across the street is Posh, a glam boutique filled with romantic, European, and old-world inspired jewelry, housewares, glasswares, lighting, and unusual gifts.
And the best baby fashions and accessories in the city. No baby will look like your Posh baby when you shop at Posh's baby department. Don't forget their baby registry.
Posh and the Perfect Petal at Lowell and 32nd Avenue in the Highland neighborhood. Open Mondays through Saturdays, 9 to 8, and Sundays, 11 to 5. 720-855-8279. That's 720-855-8279.
Tell them Style Matters says they give good shopping.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. As our low pressure moves away, we'll get better weather tomorrow than we're going to have today. Unfortunately, we will have to deal with scattered thunderstorms on through tonight. A high of 77, a low of 55. Sunshine returns tomorrow with a high of 79, and it's even warmer on Sunday with a high of 87. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150, KNRC.
Cloudy and 73, KNRC News Time is 106. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 1:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150, KNRC.
From AM 1150, KNRC, Denver's choice for talk. Now, one of the Mile High City's most compelling talk hosts, Enid Goldstein. The producer is Joe Anderson. Board operations, Jordan Lyles. Now, here's Enid.
107, 7 minutes after 1 o'clock. Welcome to the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock and coming to you live from the Denver Press Club on Glen Arm between 13th and 14th. You're welcome to come and join us for lunch today. We do these shows once a month from the Press Club, and we always have a theme. And the theme of today's show is gambling, and we'll be talking more about gambling. Also, just to let you know, Walter Mosley, the novelist, is going to be joining us in the 2 o'clock hour. He's got a brand-new E.Z. Rollins mystery out called Little Scarlet. He will be at Tattered Cover Cherry Creek tonight at 7:30, and I would be remiss if I didn't announce something that you've already heard about a million times now, but that Martha Stewart was sentenced today, and she got 5 months in the pokey, which, after she's finished with the pokey, is going to look a whole lot better, I'm sure, but she's going to appeal it. There's a whole sentiment that says, you know what, do it, get your 5 months over with. Her stock has gone up. At least, there, you know, the market doesn't like uncertainty. Kmart's going to stand by her. Her supporters are going to stand by her. She could get it behind her. But no, she's going to go for an appeal, it looks like. And maybe she only delays the 5 months. We'll see what happens. But that's what's going on. And later we're also going to be talking about the shooting that's been going on. Shooting first, asking questions later. We'll be talking about that as well here at the Press Club. Joining us now in this segment is Gil Asakawa, who is the online content editor of the Denver Post. We're talking about his new book, which is called Being Japanese American. Gil, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Talk to me about this new book and what this has to do with gambling, if anything.
Well, you know, it's a gamble to put a book out.
Yeah, it is. No kidding.
And in fact, the odds are very slim that I'll become rich or famous off of it. But that's all right. You know, it's a cool
book.
Well,
you won't be tempted to do what Martha Stewart did, so you're going to stay out of the pokey as a result.
That's right, at least for this, anyway. But there is actually a gambling component. Being Japanese American is a book about Japanese American history and culture, and a lot of it is the history piece, because, you know, Japanese Americans have an interesting history here in this country. But a lot of it is actually about our culture and how we're not quite Japanese, because we're Japanese American, but we're often not considered American by mainstream Americans. And one of the great things about this book, it was an honor for me to write a lot from my own experience, but also talking to a lot of other Japanese Americans across the country, and finding all the cultural bits and pieces that are very consistent across all.
Well,
of us.
Why Japanese came to this country in California, they came to work on the railroads.
Right.
What about in Colorado? They come to work in the gold mines.
Actually, a lot of them came because of the railroads and stayed here. Or initially, they came not just as railroad workers, but also as farm laborers. Which is, it's very much like
the
Chinese.
One of the things I miss most about California is that there was a big Asian presence in California, that we have some Asian presence here, but not as great an Asian presence. And we're lucky because our studios are located about a block away from Pacific Mercantile.
Yeah.
So you can go get some sushi there, and you can get Japanese ingredients, Asian ingredients.
Yeah, you can go to
things.
The grocery store.
And then they had the Cherry Blossom Festival, which was quite wonderful. And
it
I'm going to see if I can sign up again for Ikebana and learn how to be bad at it, as I have been in these many endeavors that I sign up for.
Well, it's a great, the Cherry
which is
Blossom
flower,
Festival.
It's Japanese flower ranking.
Ranking.
But you can you can use weeds. You can just use branches that you find in your, just lying at the side of the road, and you can make these exquisite decorations. Not like you have to go and spend a ton of money at buying all these fancy flowers.
It's in the presentation. But,
it is.
The Cherry Blossom Festival is kind of indicative. It's one of the oldest ethnic festivals. It's one of the oldest ethnic festivals in Colorado. It's 33 years, I think, this year. So it's a pretty big deal.
Tell me the fascination that gambling holds for Asians, because I know the Chinese are very, very interested in Chinatown. There's everything to do with luck. You wear jade for luck, and you go only to certain retailers that sell lottery tickets for luck.
I think
that's also true for Japanese.
There's kind of a fascination with ritual, with tradition in all Asian cultures, and Japanese definitely no different from the Chinese. In fact, when the first Japanese immigrants came to California, a lot of them would work their butts off all day and then lose all their money at night by going to Chinatown to the gambling dens. And that's kind of consistent today. I know a lot of Asians across cultures, Vietnamese friends and Chinese friends and Korean friends. Gambling is a big part of all the Asian cultures.
Why?
And it's almost genetic. I want to say it's genetic. The gene missed
it
me.
It missed you?
It missed me. I am not into the gambling
thing.
See,
this is what I don't get. I think that life is so much of a gamble, that there's so many gambles involved in life. Will you invest in this or that kind of a business? Will you take this job or not take that job?
Right.
Will you gamble and move your family across country for something that looks like it's a better deal for you in terms of your
gambles.
Work? Those are all gambles. And at least you have some chance of winning when you gamble. with, you know, at casinos and so on, mm-hmm. you don't have a the odds go to the house. You have virtually no chance to really win. They're always going to win over time.
No, but, you know.
And so why should you, is it that people do it because it's exciting? It's really hot for the moment and you really get into it. It's kind of like a drug.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a high.
I think it is clinically like a high, but I think a lot of it is that kind of the hope for, it's for the same reason the Asians came to the U.S. It's a big gamble, you know, trying to get the better life. When the Chinese first came here, they called America Gold Mountain.
That's right.
You know, so they thought of it as a big, you know, big gamble. Let's throw the dice and see.
What would be really surprised to know about Japanese? I love one of the things I, as I said, I missed is that great Asian presence. Uh-huh. In Colorado, though it exists. You can get sushi here. There are Japanese restaurants.
There's a Colorado Dragon Boat Festival coming up July 31st and August 1st. It's a huge Pan-Asian festival.
Where?
Sloan's Lake Park in Denver.
Okay.
And you know, this is the fourth year. Disclosure here, I'm a volunteer with the festival.
Uh-huh.
But last year they got...
Full disclosure means you have to take off all your clothes. Yes. Never mind.
50,000 people came last year to Sloan's Lake, and they're expecting more than that this year. And it's a great celebration of Asian culture. So it's here. In terms of the Japanese culture, you know, and gambling specifically, groups of Japanese Americans love going up to Central City in Black Hawk. Unbelievable. And it's a thing. I mean, it's a thing to go gambling. Like to go to Vegas, there mm-hmm. are groups that go to Vegas. And there's specifically I think it's called the California Hotel in the older downtown part of Vegas. If you go, it has Japanese food on all their bar menus. Not Japanese food, like Japanese American food, you know. And you look around the room, you know, smoke hazy, cigarette smoke and all that, and it's nothing but Asians, mostly Japanese Americans at the slots.
Wow.
So it's a thing. It's definitely a quantifiable madness.
Madness. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure.
Gil Asakawa, brand new book, Being Japanese American. Where can we buy this book?
Should be available at places like Countercover. If not today, then very soon. It's being shipped, I know, even as we speak, because I got a couple boxes the other day.
Nikkei means first generation?
No, Nikkei is, although it's thought of as a Japanese stock market, the word Nikkei also means in Japanese anybody of Japanese descent
and
who
Hapa?
Lives outside of
Japan. And Hapa?
Hapa is actually the origin's Hawaiian, but it means mixed race.
Mixed race.
Yeah.
Well, I want to say to you, Gil Asakawa, arigato.
No. Domo. Thank you.
I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to AM 1150 KNRC. It's a fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. You're listening to AM 1150 KNRC.
Lock us in on your first preset. AM 1150 KNRC. KNRC. The way Denver spells talk radio. KNRC. KNRC.
Hi, this is Dave Tewksbury, and since 1996, our store, Tewksbury & Company, has been known as downtown Denver's lifestyle store. We specialize in the most sought-after and highly rated cigars with over 300 selections in our spacious walk-in humidor. But many of our customers know us as the store for tasting and purchase of Colorado's award-winning wines 7 days a week. Yeah, you heard me right. We sell wines on Sunday, too. In fact, we received Westward's Best of Denver Award for the best place to buy wines on a Sunday. In addition, for those of you who are outdoor enthusiasts, we're the only store to offer fly fishing supplies and licensed fly fishing guide service in downtown Denver. Our 5 employees are knowledgeable and congenial, and it'll help you to find that right cigar or bottle of Colorado wine. Now, we're located in Ryder Square, just between the 16th Street Mall and Larimer Square, so stop by and give us a call at 303-825-1880 or visit us on the web at TewksburyCompany.com. At Tewksbury & Company, we say if you love cigars, wines, or fly fishing, we talk your language.
There's nothing like the blues. If you're a blues fan, make plans to attend the Hudson Gardens and Event Center's 2-day event celebrating visual and performing artists. The Red, White, and Blues Fest, July 24th and 25th from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. KNRC is proud to co-sponsor the Red, White, and Blues Fest, where daytime admission is free. The list of Saturday performers includes Metro Blues, Kevin Dooley, Little Mary, Delta Sonics, and the legendary Pine Top Perkins and Friends. On Sunday, you'll be treated to the sounds of Easy Bill and the Big Beat, Tempa and the Tantrums, The J.D. Kelly Review, Tommy Thomas, and Big Bill Morganfield. 2 days of the best blues you'll hear this summer, only at Hudson Gardens and Event Center, July 24th and 25th. As you stroll through the gardens, check out their juried art show, a treat for the eyes. Beer and wine are also available. Tickets for headliner shows in the evening at 6:30 p.m. are $7.50 for adults and $2 for children. For more information and ticket sales, call 303-797-8565. That's 303-797-8565. Sponsored in part by Westward. The 2004 Chautauqua Summer Concert Series is here. Spend a memorable summer night in the historic setting of Chautauqua Auditorium in Boulder and hear great artists from around the world and across the musical spectrum. Monday, July 21st, see Grammy Award winner Sean Colvin. And on Saturday, July 24th, it's Yuzu Endure. For the complete lineup and tickets, visit Chautauqua.com. The 2004 Chautauqua Summer Concert Series is brought to you by AM 1150 KNRC.
I'm Sue Herrera, CNBC Business Radio. Stocks are mixed at this hour. The Dow is up just about 9 points. The NASDAQ is down better than 16. A shameful day, in her words, for Martha Stewart, but a lucrative one for shareholders in her company. Shares of Martha Stewart Living OmniMedia are up 30% after she received a relatively lenient 5 months in prison and 5 months of home confinement for lying to federal authorities. Stewart's co-defendant, her former stockbroker, Peter Bukanovic, will be sentenced momentarily for his role in the sale of ImClone stock. A modest increase last month in consumer prices, just half the spike we saw in May, which was due to the soaring cost of gasoline. Today's Labor Department report is calming any residual inflation fears. Ford is recalling nearly 900,000 Taurus and Mercury Sable sedans to fix a problem with their front springs. The vehicles were registered in cold weather states where winter driving could cause those springs to rust and puncture a tire. Sue Herrera, CNBC Business Radio.
The Chicago Underground Daily calls it an amazing cinematic wonder, spellbinding.
My daughter, I'm not sure if I can make it.
Father, you must remain strong, for I bring good news.
Oh, you bring good news?
Yes, I just save a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
Okay, here you go. The perfect house. So you ready to put in a bid?
A what?
It's a pretty tight market, and I'd really hate to see you lose out.
It's the first house you've shown us.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Not working with a Century 21 agent. Century 21 agents pledge to keep showing you properties until you're satisfied. Only Century 21 agents offer the Century 21 Service Pledge to help reduce the stress of buying real estate. Century21.com. Real estate for your world.
The Century 21 Pledge is offered by participating offices. Each office is independently owned and operated.
Do you remember Alex in Family Ties?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome.
That was really Doug Kellen. Hear Doug afternoons at 3 p.m. on AM 1150 KNIC. On AM 1150, KNIC.
120 on the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. Our monthly theme this month is gambling. And joining us in this segment, Richard Hill, General Manager of Fagan's, where they've been hosting a Hold'em, Texas Hold'em poker tournament now for the last several weeks, and he's emerged several weeks of no sleep. And drinking to excess. No, I'm just kidding, of course. And joining us also is Will Shanley, the Denver Post reporter, who wrote a story this week about the popularity of Texas Hold'em. Thank you for joining us as well, Will. Talk to me about why did you institute this poker tournament at Fagan's? It's just another way to kind of bring people into the door. Has there been an outcry for it? Fagan's is what, a bar and grill?
Yes, it's a neighborhood restaurant and pub.
And it's where?
It's at 1135 East Evans.
Okay. And so you decided that the one way to boost traffic would be to?
Well, originally it was just slow Monday night, about one table. Thought maybe I can get eight players in and just create some excitement. And we put a banner up and the phone never stopped ringing.
What happened? Oh, so this is really?
Yeah.
Are there that many Texas Hold'em? Is this because you see it on televised on cable? Is that why the popularity has increased? Well, what happened? Did you do a story about it?
Well, I would say that that's kind of what sparked my interest in the story. Is every time I'd turn on the TV, a different channel had
there was Ben Affleck, who hadn't slept in about a year.
Exactly.
That's right.
Bleary-eyed, and You know, and everyone that I'd speak with, friends and people that I'd meet would, you know, everyone was talking about Texas Hold'em, and I saw it as a trend.
How was that different from poker? They were just trying to teach me Texas Hold'em, and I'm afraid that I lost everything, and now I'm homeless, and I'm going to have to sleep at the press club from now on, or otherwise known as the depressed club. How is Texas Hold'em different from poker, regular poker?
Well, it's actually not different. You still have your five best cards wins, and it's just the way you gamble is different, because you'll get your two down cards, you place your bet, then they have what they call the flop,
right,
which is three cards,
right,
you bet again, then you turn another card.
But is it more popular because it's a hotter way of doing it? Is it a faster way of doing it? Is there more suspense in doing it this way?
Well, I think there's a couple of different factors there. Like you're saying, there's suspense and there's strategy that goes into it. You know, instead of having all of the cards to each person where they're the only ones that can see it, there's the five community cards that everyone can use. So you can kind of gauge what other people have, yet there's still the two whole cards that each player has independently of everyone else. And, you know, that just adds to the strategy where you know partly what your opponents are going to have, but there's still the two cards where you really don't know. So there's definitely more strategy involved than with just the traditional five-card draw poker.
Will Shanley, who is a reporter for the Denver Post, what's your usual beat?
Yeah. General assignment, you know, anything from cops and courts to, you know, feature stories like Texas Hold'em or...
And you were drawn to it because you saw that it was, because you'd seen so much of it on cable.
Well, that was the initial spark. And then also...
Are your friends playing Texas Hold'em? Is that the story?
And that kind of was where I was going next is, yeah, you know, all of my friends, it started maybe about 6 months ago, where everybody was just, hey, this is so much fun, and started playing it, you know, once or twice a week. And I kind
of... Are you playing it?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And are you ahead or behind for the...
you know, I'd say overall I'm ahead.
That's what all gamblers say. They all say, I'm ahead. They all say that. They don't say how badly they lost.
No. When I lose, you know, 10, 15 bucks, I normally call it a night there, so...
So it's really become a phenomenon, playing Texas Hold'em.
Absolutely.
And how much has this boosted the business at Fagan's?
You know, it's hard to put a number on it, but if you put a typical Monday night and add 48 players plus the people that come and watch, and it just is a big increase.
Is this every night you're doing it at Fagan's or just on Monday
night? No. After this poker tournament runs its course, we are going to add a Wednesday night.
So you have two nights.
Right. And, of course, we don't want to lose our identity as a neighborhood pub and become known as the poker bar. But
it's something that's happening. You go out and you have something to eat, you have something to drink, and there's poker going on, and you have fun watching it or participating in it.
Yes.
What observations can you make, since you are, you know, running a bar and grill, about the people who are playing cards? What does it tell us? Is there some sense, in other words, can we make some larger extrapolations out of this? Can we say that there's a becoming a return more to community, people wanting to get together and do stuff with each other, not just online, you know, playing games online, which a lot of card games happen online?
Absolutely.
I'm always amazed when people sit there and play solitaire online. I'm thinking, this is the decline and fall of just about everything.
I've seen a lot of friendships made from strangers. They come back and they sit at the same table again and develop friendships. And it's very good camaraderie, and everyone has a lot of fun. And it's a very diverse
group. How much is the most anybody's won?
It's $48,000. Is every... But that's
can only
chips.
One person can only one person win $48,000?
Yes. Yes,
when will we know who that person is, and whether he's single or not?
Yes. It's not actually really money. It's we start everyone with $1,000, and the last man standing goes on to the final tournament.
So it's just you say you won $48,000, but it's $48,000 in play money.
Correct.
Are there any real prizes that they can get?
Oh, absolutely. Apple Vacation is sponsoring it. The winner. It's a trip for two for a week, all expenses to Puerto Vallarta.
Mm.
So, and numerous other prizes for the final table, gift certificates and what have you.
And Will, have you been nominated for a Pulitzer Prize yet for this story on Texas Hold'em?
You know, I don't think I'm going to quite land that one, but
you never know.
my editors were definitely happy with the story. And
any fallout that was unexpected from the story?
No, I would say the feedback has been very positive. I've gotten a number of emails, phone calls asking for, hey, how can we set up our own tournament?
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Are there other competing bars and grills, seeing how successful this has been for yours, who are wanting to institute the same sort of...
There are probably about 15 to 20 places right now doing it, but I foresee that growing.
Well, who else is doing it besides Bagans?
I don't know.
A bar called Gibby's.
Gibby's?
Gibby's.
Anything in Lodo? Near the station?
You know, there. It's pretty much all over.
Maybe I could do
Denver.
That. You know what? Maybe I could do that instead of my show. Noon to 3. Why should I bother with politics when we could just do Texas Hold'em?
It's and more
somebody
fun that
could,
way.
And somebody could pretend to be Ben Affleck. And then someone else can pretend to be J-Lo. And and we can have, like, a lot of cigarette smoke. You know, special effects. All right, so Gibby's, where's Gibby's?
You know, I believe it's in Aurora.
Okay.
And the Denver Poker Tour has set up, and I believe at last count, about 17 different bars stretching from...
There's something called the Denver Poker Tour?
The Denver Poker Tour. And it,
what does this consist of?
It's basically, I don't know exactly how many employees, but, you know, it's a handful of people, and they help bars execute and run... poker tournaments.
This is so amazing to me. People organize themselves around everything. So a few people have organized themselves around and calling themselves the Denver Poker Tour, and I hope they have a float or something so that we can see them when they go around town with a lot of cards sticking out from it. And do they make money doing this?
You know, I believe that the host bar pays them, you know, a certain percentage.
So in other words, they go into a bar and they show you how you can set it up, how you can make this work out, how you can increase your clientele as a result. That's what they're doing.
Mm-hmm,
what a great
exactly.
niche. What a great specialty. If you love being a card player, you can go around and show people how they can arrange these games. And then do you have speed dating too with this or no?
Yeah, no. Not yet.
That's not a full service bar. Well, thank you, both of you, for joining us today. This has been illuminating. Anything we should know if we're going to play Texas Hold'em? Is there a way where they can hold you up as you're playing Texas Hold'em? I mean, are there these cheating things that you should know about or no? Other than the usual mark cards, you know, the things that you see in the movies.
No, I'd just say, as a card player, you just need to know when to fold, basically.
You want to write a song about that? Know when to hold them and know when to fold them?
It's very, very true song, very true.
It's also a lot different the way they bet, because when it's not really their money, it's a little hard to bluff.
Wait, so you're saying, though, if you have never played poker before, man or woman, you get men and women, not just men, right?
Correct.
So
right.
It's a mixed bag. And even if you've never really played before, can you feel confident coming in or comfortable coming in and knowing that you won't be too regarded as too dopey?
Well, my favorite saying is I'd rather be lucky than good. You know, so
that's well, that's what Napoleon said. Napoleon said, I don't want good generals. He said, I want lucky generals. Thank you both for joining us today. Thank you, Richard Hill, General Manager of Fagans, Southeast Denver Bar and Grill, where they're currently in the midst of the Texas Hold'em Poker Tournament. When is it going to be finished?
It's August 16th. It will be the final tournament date.
And Will Shanley, thank you so much for joining us, Denver Post reporter who's been writing about the popularity of Texas Hold'em. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to AM 1150 KNRC. It's a fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club.
Award-winning news and entertaining talk. This is AM 1150 KNRC.
1:31, time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Enid. Cloudy and 73 degrees now. A man who threatened Kobe Bryant's accuser has been sentenced. I'll have that story in a moment. First, let's check the roads. Here's Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
Problems in the mousetrap this afternoon. We have the report brought to you by Denver Center's Triple Espresso. It's a stalled vehicle causing this delay. Southbound I-25 approaching 20th Street. Denver police trying to work their way in there to clean it out, but traffic is jammed back into the mousetrap, if not back to perhaps 50th Avenue right now. Westbound I-70 up in the high country around Chief Hosea, now back to normal after an earlier SUV rollover accident there. Rest of the freeway system here in town, moving along in good shape, says the CDOT maps. It's a triple jolt of craziness that crackles with energy, infectious fun for the whole family. See Triple Espresso. Tickets at DenverCenter.org. Call 303-893-4100. Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
A four-month federal prison camp sentence today for 23-year-old William Roach of Davenport, Iowa, for threatening the woman who says Kobe Bryant raped her. Last July 27th, Roach called the alleged victim on the phone to threaten her. The threat was originally heard by the woman's father. He and the alleged victim's mother were both in the Denver federal courtroom today for the sentencing. Roach also received a $1,000 fine. This report brought to you by Goodyear. State and federal land managers are no longer expecting an above-average wildfire season this summer. June's rainfall and cooler-than-average temperatures helped lessen the fire danger to most of the West. Before June, officials said they were expecting this year to be like 2002, when 1 million acres burned. Growth in the metro area slowed last year compared to the late 1990s, but didn't stop Thornton and Boulder from growing. Those cities have now both passed the 100,000 population mark, making 8 cities in the metro area with populations of 100,000 or more. Thornton officials were enthusiastic about the news, while those in Boulder were concerned, saying that growth brings more responsibility for affordable housing. Now through July 17th, get up to $75 worth of free groceries with the purchase of 4 selected Goodyear tires. Call 1-800-GOODYEAR for complete details and the retailer nearest you. We'll take a look at the KNRC weather forecast next. KNRC News Time is 1:33.
Lock us in on your first preset. AM 1150. KNRC. KNRC.
If you're a guy that needs to lose weight but doesn't want to eat like a sissy, try Advanced Z-Carb. Z-Carb blocks the fat-causing carbs from the foods you love, like pizza, french fries, and beer, allowing you to lose weight fast. Listen to these Z-Carb users.
Before Z-Carb, 6 weeks ago I had a gut, but now look, no gut. I lost 25 pounds.
Atkins, Z-Carb helped me drop 4 belt notches in 3 weeks.
No starving, no killer workouts. I lost 30 pounds.
Forget the gimmicks and starvation diets. Z-Carb is an advanced doctor-recommended formula that uses natural ingredients to help you lose weight fast. Best of all, Z-Carb comes with a money-back guarantee.
Call now to try Advanced Z-Carb, risk-free for 30 days at 888-201-1540. Ask how to receive a free supply with your purchase at 888-201-1540. Get your money back if you don't see dramatic results. Call 888-201-1540. That's 888-201-1540. 201-1540.
Checking the KNRC weather forecast, mostly cloudy skies, scattered showers and thunderstorms, maybe some heavy rain possible through the afternoon into the evening hours. It'll become partly cloudy after midnight, maybe some patchy fog too after midnight, upper 50s for tonight's low. Mostly sunny tomorrow morning, partly cloudy with some thunderstorms possible in the afternoon. We'll top out in the mid-80s tomorrow. Cloudy and 73 now. KNRC News Time is 1:35. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 2 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, this is Dave Tewksbury, and since 1996, our store, Tewksbury & Company, has been known as downtown Denver's lifestyle store. We specialize in the most sought-after and highly rated cigars with over 300 selections in our spacious walk-in humidor. But many of our customers know us as the store for tasting and purchase of Colorado's award-winning wines 7 days a week. Yeah, you heard me right. We sell wines on Sunday, too. In fact, we received Westward's Best of Denver Award for the best place to buy wines on a Sunday. In addition, for those of you who are outdoor enthusiasts, we're the only store to offer fly fishing supplies and licensed fly fishing guide service in downtown Denver. Our 5 employees are knowledgeable and congenial. It'll help you to find that right cigar or bottle of Colorado wine. Now, we're located in Ryder Square, just between the 16th Street Mall and Larimer Square, so stop by and give us a call at 303-825-1880 or visit us on the web at TewksburyCompany.com. At Tewksbury & Company, we say if you love cigars, wines, or fly fishing, we talk your language.
I'm Mandy. I'm a social worker. All I can say is, don't try your mind games with me, Kellett, because the first time you do, that's it.
You've lost a listener, loser.
Doug Kellett, weekdays from 3 to 6 on AM 1150 KNRC. You're listening to the Enid Goldstein Show on AM 1150 KNRC. Here again, Enid Goldstein.
1:36 on the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. I'm yours until 3 o'clock today. Later in the broadcast, we're going to be joined by novelist, mystery novelist, Walter Mosley. He's going to be appearing at Tattered Cover. His brand new novel in the E.C. Rollins mystery series, which is really quite wonderful. I love reading his mysteries. So he'll be joining us in the next hour. In joining us in this segment is Brian Crescenti.
Crescenti.
Right. Have I said it right? Rocky Mountain News crime reporter. And we have been talking about gambling. This is a little bit aside, but it's something that I am very interested in, and we've been talking about this all week long. And this is the story of the controversial police shooting of a man who was bedridden, and all he had in his hand, the glint of metal, was of a soda can and not a gun.
Right.
And this is the fourth time. I have only been in Denver for about 2 years. This is the fourth shoot first, ask questions later incident that I have known about that has gotten a lot of publicity. And, of course, it's been reported today and yesterday as well that the feds are getting involved. So, fill us in. Tell us what the latest is on this case.
Well, the latest is what you just mentioned. The federal government has said after the police investigation, after the Denver District Attorney investigates, they will be reviewing the case, they being the civil rights unit within the...
Who got them involved?
That's a good question. There have been exchanges between law enforcement locally and the Department of Justice, since Paul Childs at least, and everybody's sort of, no one really wants to say who it is that actually...
Who do you think? Who would you guess?
I can't say. It involves sourcing as well. We printed a story a few days ago where we quoted an anonymous source. So
And what did the anonymous source say?
That they had notified the Department of Justice about some concerns they had about patterns they were seeing in the shootings that involved... issues around education, training, and recruitment of Denver police officers.
Well, I mean, clearly two of them have had problematic marriages, where in the case of Jim Turney, he threatens his former mother-in-law the night before he shoots Paul Childs. It would go to whatever is the state of his alleged mental health was, or state of mind. And then you've got a situation here where in a messy divorce proceeding about, last year sometime, this officer involved had threatened to take out the former wife's boyfriend and kidnap his own child from her clutches and so on. So you have kind of messy private lives that somehow get intrude on the professional performance.
Well, I think there is a clear distinction though between the two. In the case of of Turney, he had actually been charged or was later charged with a crime. And it was a pretty overt threat. I think in talking about this latest shooting, this is something that was sort of said back and forth during a child custody issues. And right. And it's not.
Yeah,
really,
but it's
the same
quite
level.
A threat to make. It's quite a threat to make, even though in the heat of battle, in the heat of the moment. And I'm concerned with the people that I had. And I want to emphasize this because I'm concerned with three different institutions in Colorado, at least three right now, that we're seeing sort of the same kind of ingrained cultural pattern. We're seeing in Denver Health a pattern of abuse, apparently. It's been going on for quite some years with paramedics and EMTs. It's a culture that has not been addressed from the top. It's only just being addressed now after all these years, as 17 have been disciplined and or fired. And then we have we have CU. We've seen the culture of recruiting there. And then they have an investigation and a show trial and this and that and the other. Nothing happens and business as usual. And people are protecting their own little acre of net worth and their power. And you see a culture in play there. And now we're looking at the Denver Police Department. This is, again, in the wake of the Paul Child shooting, we're seeing all these reforms that were supposed to be implemented. And yet we still see this ingrained culture. Individually, men and women that I have met from the Denver Police Department, a fine group. I've talked to a number of detectives, and they have been individually a fine group. But clearly there's something going on there in the culture. And it looks like Jerry Whitman, by all accounts, a very fine man, everybody seems to really like him, doesn't have a hold of it. What do you know about what's going on in the culture of the Denver Police Department?
Well, I think that's a key issue. I yesterday spoke with an expert who deals with these sort of issues, Sam Walker. And he was saying that culture is sort of the problem in general. That
there or everywhere?
In any place that you want to make a change. The changes that the mayor implemented really haven't even got any steam yet. They're sort of getting started. And the time frame between...
What were some of those changes?
It included an increased amount of less lethal weapons like tasers. It included increasing the CIT training, which is where you bring in a team who can talk a person down.
CIT stands for?
Critical Incident Team. Okay. And it included changing some of the verbiage in their policy. One thing, adding that they respect life. And while that sounds like it could be lip service, what Sam Walker says is that's an important thing to teach officers. Of course, they realize that life is important. But the old mentality in general of police departments is you need to make an arrest, and that's the most important thing. And now they're saying the most important thing is that you don't kill somebody. And as Sam Walker pointed out, that is something that has to be changed, the culture.
What about shoot reviews or shoot committees?
They are in the process of trying to implement changes in the way civilian oversight works in the department. The mayor said he will be announcing a new form. It should be coming soon. And a lot of people think it'll probably be something similar to an auditor model like San Jose has. And that's basically where you have an outside agency that works for the city but is not part of the police department that kind of audits the department regularly and looks at different issues like police involved shootings.
How does any of this really address the culture of the Denver Police Department? And clearly there are issues here about the culture. What do you know, having covered it on your beat, and you are, you know, you're reporting on the crime beat, so it's...
I think, again, going back to what Sam Walker said, changing the culture is about changing the policies and changing the people who enforce the policies, not necessarily the chief, but sort of that the sergeants, the lieutenants, the captains.
What's the reputation of the culture of the Denver Police Department in these days now? What are you hearing, Brian Crescenti, crime reporter for the Rocky Mountain News?
Well, I hate to offer an opinion on that because
you don't have to offer an opinion, but what are you hearing?
I think in general that. You know, it's really hard to say. It depends on who you're talking to.
And the range of what you're hearing. Depending on who you're talking to. What do some people say?
I think a lot of people who are happy with the Denver Police Department.
Happy or unhappy?
No, happy. I think that also there are people who aren't. I mean, there are activists who've obviously, during Paul Childs, we had a lot of meetings, and that came up. The chief mentioned in a letter he sent, I think it was yesterday, that citizen complaints are drastically down, and that's true. So it's sort of...
Do you think if I were asking you know you to look in the tea leaves, do you think that Chief Whitman's job is going to be in jeopardy here on this one?
It's hard to say. I think that he, the mayor said yesterday
that he supports him, but that's what he's saying yesterday. What do you think down the line?
I think that Chief Whitman does a good job, and I think that only time will tell. I know I'm kind of weaseling out on that, but...
Do you know what Jeff Greenfield said on CNN yesterday? He said, only bad reporters say only time will tell.
Uh-oh.
I know you're not a bad reporter, Brian, so don't say that anymore. Clichés are us. Okay, so what about Hickenlooper? What does he got to do here?
Well, I think he has to do what he's doing. He's implemented changes. The problem is the changes that he's implemented really haven't gone into effect yet, and we had this other shooting. And, of course, people aren't going to say that's okay, but... Those changes aren't going to happen immediately. You've got decades of culture that are sort of built in, and changing that is not something.
And what are some of the decades of culture? What are some of those cultural threads that run through? That the arrest is more important? The more collars you have, the more it adds to your professional luster?
I think in general you can say that about police departments. Police departments traditionally, historically, have been about arrests. And sort of nationwide, as Sam Walker was saying, nationwide there's this trend now to put in phrases like respect life and to remind officers that...
But none of the things that you mentioned really seem to me to really address the culture. And that you have to do by removing some people who are in key spots. That you have to do that in a different way, I think, than simply putting in a phrase about we respect life.
Right. Well,
there's some civilian oversight, but that doesn't. You still are up against an entrenched culture. How do you change that entrenched culture?
According to the experts I spoke with, they said that that's done through.
Did you only speak with the one expert, Sam Walker?
I spoke with two. I only put one in this article. I didn't get a chance to do a full interview with the other, Jeffrey Alpert, who.
Go talk to Joe McNamara, who used to be the police chief of San Jose. And is a fellow at the Hoover Institution and started out as a beat cop in Harlem and got a PhD from Harvard and writes mysteries in his spare time. Talk to him and see what he would say about this, about the entrenched culture. I'd be very interested to hear what he would have to say. In fact, you know what? We ought to get him on. I've interviewed him before. He is really very he's somebody of a school of when you have small-time drugs, throw it out. Forget it. It's not an arrest. It's not worth the police's time on that kind of stuff. I mean, he's very common sense. And I think it goes against the grain of some of the posturing, these tough-on-crime kind of posturing that we're seeing now. But if you, you know, if we were trying to, there is a culture, for example, at the Rocky Mountain News, right?
Right.
There's a culture at every single newspaper. There's a culture at our radio station. There's a culture at the Denver Police Department. How would you go about changing the culture at any given institution?
That's a good question. I don't think I can answer it. I mean,
you have to remove some people from some of their positions where they're influencing and dissing. You know, whatever the new policies are, you're going to have all of the dissers in there who are going to diss that new policy and want to do business as usual. So what has to be done? I mean, if you were legislating it from a common sense approach, what suggestions might you think ought to be made that maybe people ought to start considering?
Again, I kind of go back to what they've said before. You change the tactics, some of the training that goes on, and you make sure you enforce those new policies.
All right, then let me talk about the training. We've got, for example, in the case of Jim Turney, in the Paul Childs case, he was at the bottom of the barrel of his class. Where was Ford in his class? I mean, these are...
Let me say something about both shootings. It appears, and again, this comes from speaking with different people for both shootings, but it appears that the issue isn't at the moment when the trigger's pulled. It's the things that led up to that moment. In the case of Jim Turney, it was him going, as I think LaCabe said, when he wrote his letter about the decision to penalize him 10 months, suspend him for 10 months.
Yeah, which I thought was a slap on the wrist. I thought he should have been fired. But in firing him, the city would have had to admit a certain kind of guilt, and the settlement probably would have been higher.
Right, I think. And there was also an issue about what they've done with officers in the past. But in that case, Turney pulling the trigger, I mean, he had someone coming at him with a knife. And under the guidelines, they say that's okay.
But he put himself in that position.
Well, and that's the question. Why was he standing in the doorway?
Okay, what about the question of Ford? Are we calling him Officer Ford?
Officer Ford.
How come he went in a window? What was that all about?
Well, and
who gave him the permission to do it?
And that's
and
the question.
With or without a warrant?
Right. Well, he did. They did have. He had. The person they were there to arrest had two arrest warrants out for him, and they also had the permission of the homeowner. So legally, they're allowed to go into the house. The question is tactics. Should they go into the house? And, of course, that's something that I'm sure the police department and the DA's office is investigating. And at this point, we, of course, don't know all the reasons behind it. We don't know if there was some other issue out there that led them to do that.
So what are we going to be looking for next as the story unfolds? When are we going to hear from the feds? Do we know?
They are waiting till after the local investigation is concluded.
And when will that be, do you suppose?
You know, that's a hard question. It's something that can be time-consuming because, of course, I mean, there are so many different things they have to look into. It could be, I would say, well, it could be weeks to months.
Weeks to months. And are the feds investigating while the local investigation is going on? Or do they wait until the local investigation is concluded before they begin to investigate?
My impression, this is a sort of secret process. They don't like to, the DOJ doesn't like, of course, law enforcement to know exactly what they're looking at until they're done. It sounds like what they'll do is sort of keep an eye on things, and once it's concluded, come in and review the investigation and see if more stuff has to be done.
And this is the civil rights section of the DOJ,
right.
Department of Justice?
Correct.
Looking to see what specifically, if there's a pattern of civil rights abuse?
It sounds like, according to the source that we quoted a few days ago, the Rocky Mountain News quoted a few days ago, that they might be looking at things like a pattern in things like tactics, the education of officers, and recruitment of officers. But again, we don't know. That's sort of what was passed on to them.
Do you think that, I mean, in talking to people and reporting on the story, does Whitman seem to be intimidated by his by police officers and by the culture? Is he somebody who seems to be intimidated by them? Because I'm not seeing him take forceful action. I'm wondering.
I don't think so. My impression is not that he does that. I mean, I think that he does what he thinks is right. You know, of course, I don't know what goes on behind closed doors, but it seems like
does he have a lot of support in that department?
I did a story about a year ago, I think. Well, it was when Mayor Hickenlooper was coming in, and his job was sort of on the line,
Right.
and spent a lot of time with the chief and spoke with a lot of groups. Of course, you can't speak to every officer, but the general impression I was left with is that officers like him. They certainly liked him when he was made chief. He was someone who came up through the ranks. He was in patrol, which is not, you know, that's, you know, hitting the street and doing the hardest job.
How do they feel about Hickenlooper, that they who they were taunting with cries of Chicken Looper? Why did they think that was going to get them somewhere?
Well, I think that they were very upset with the outcome of the Paul Child shooting.
Why were they so upset? I mean, Paul Child should have been fired. Jim Turney should have been fired.
I think that they
From my point of view on
right.
that.
It's hard to say. I mean, they were saying that you can't be in their shoes and understand why they make the decisions.
Why are this? Explain to me. Your beat is crime. I come to town and I see them in the, practically arresting a jaywalker, and six squads swoop down on this poor jaywalker. I rode with on two nights on East Colfax, one to bust hookers and one to bust Johns. And again, you'd have these hapless hookers, and I mean really hapless is too kind a description. Their hands are cuffed and 6-8 undercover cars swoop down for the one bust. What? Why do they do this? Does this indicate a frightened force, a force that thinks that it needs to have a lot of power? I mean, why do you need so much, you know, firepower, really, to bust the hapless hooker who's already cuffed?
I think just with any incident, you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, this started, the Lobato shooting started as a domestic violence call.
Right.
You never know when you're going to have something blow up in your face. So it's best to have as many officers as possible. It's interesting.
Well, why not have 1,000? Well,
they can't afford it.
Oh, I see. I've never seen it in any jurisdiction. I've never seen that many cars swooping down on what seemed to be relatively minor.
You know, I did a ride-along, I think it was last month or 2 months ago, with the helicopter, Denver helicopter unit.
Uh-huh.
And it was interesting because I had always thought, even covering the beat, that they only went to these high-profile crimes. Well, they do patrol. I was there. They were hovering over a guy who did a traffic stop. And that's because they don't know. They never know when something's going to happen. And if an officer's alone, then he's in danger, or could be.
All right, so what are we going to see happen next?
The local investigation will conclude. The DOJ will conclude. There will be an internal affairs investigation, which can't start until the criminal is done,
right.
Which will decide Officer Ford's fate. And more than likely, we'll be hearing from the mayor on the changes in his policies.
Do you expect any real change to happen?
I think that the new form of civilian oversight is going to be an enormous change. I think it's going to have a huge impact on the department.
Well, I know that you're going to keep us informed, Brian Grisenti. Thank you so much.
Try.
For reporting, crime reporter for the Rocky Mountain News as the story unfolds. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club on AM 1150, KNRC.
She's your midday rush alternative. Enid Goldstein on AM 1150, KNRC. Enid Goldstein, KNRC.
We have to talk.
Don't get stuck buying the lemon that broke down this morning. Ask your dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report. Now with a buyback guarantee. Visit CARFAX.com for details.
Rhinestones, tiger print, llama print, giraffe print, newsprint, man perms, frosted man perms, pompadours, tidy whities, excessive gold chains, excessive gold teeth.
Hi, I'm Stacey London.
And I'm Clinton Kelly from TLC's What Not to Wear.
If we catch you in any of these things, we will beat you with a fanny pack.
Bracelets, shirts that say I'm with stupid, anything.
See What Not to Wear before we see you.
Ponytails, anything you get for free, ties with cartoon characters, lederhosen.
What Not to Wear. All new episode tonight at 10 Eastern and Pacific on TLC. Look good. Feel good.
Meet Amy and Dawn.
Hi.
How are you?
With her family vacation approaching, Amy had new tires installed.
That's right.
So did Dawn.
It's true.
But Dawn got hers installed on Sunday.
On Sunday?
At the mall.
The mall?
Where she shopped while she waited.
You got to shop?
That's because Dawn went to Sears Auto Center.
Wish I did.
Now save even more with all Bridgestone tires on sale through July 31st. Plus only at Sears, save an extra $25 or $50 with the purchase of 4 select Bridgestone tires. See store for details. Sears, good life, great price.
AutoZone has sizzling hot prices on your favorite motor oils. Exxon Superflow conventional motor oil, only 99 cents a quart. Castrol conventional motor oil, $1.49 a quart. At AutoZone today.
We are gathered here today to join this station and this listener in holy matrimony.
Do you, the listener, take traffic and weather together through tie-ups and sudden showers for newscasts and financial information from talk show to talk show till power outage do you part?
I do.
I now pronounce you listener and listenee. You may now kiss the dial.
Ah, sheer wedded bliss. Hope you are enjoying the honeymoon as much as we are.
We plan for it to be a long one.
AM 1150, KNRC. She's the Rush alternative.
Did you talk about something else?
And she's not on medication.
Thank you.
Enid Goldstein, noon till 3, exclusively on AM 1150, KNRC. Enid Goldstein Show on AM 1150 KNRC. Here again, Enid Goldstein.
157 on the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live. I'm yours until 3 o'clock, and we are coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. We do these shows once a month from the Press Club, and usually they have a theme, and the theme this month is gambling. Although we're sort of not adhering all that tightly to the theme, because as you were just listening, we had Brian Crescenti on, who is a crime reporter for the Rocky Mountain News, talking about the shooting and the unarmed man with a soda can, formerly homeless, the wrong guy. He was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Another case of shoot first and ask questions later. We have one more hour together, and in the next hour, we're going to be joined by Walter Mosley, one of my favorite writers. He's got a new entry into the E.Z. Rollins mystery series, the latest book, Little Scarlet. He's going to be at Tattered Cover Cherry Creek tonight at 7:30, and we'll be talking with him. And if you're just tuning in, you have missed Norm Clark, who's a gossip columnist for the Las Vegas News Review and was formerly gossip columnist for the Rocky Mountain News. You've missed watching me fail miserably at learning how to play Texas Hold'em. And you've missed a lot of great stuff, but we have an hour together coming up, and so we'll be talking about all kinds of stuff. And one of the things that we've been talking about as well is Martha Stewart. Unless you've been among the nearly comatose, she is sentenced to 5 months in the pokey. She's going to appeal it. We've been talking about poker, and she's going to the pokey, and there's not a whole lot of correspondence except that they sound a little bit alike. So that's new if you are just tuning in. The other thing that I want to talk about, too, is I went to the Cary fundraiser. It was held here last night at the Denver Press Club. I stopped by on my way home, and I have to tell you, there were 300 people. And at $25 a person, what's the math? What should it have been at 300 people at $25 a person? How much is that? 500? 7,500? No. Look, none of us can add and subtract. $25 a person times 300. How much is that? How much? 2,000? No. I'm going to ask you a question. Do the math. $25 a person times 300. How much is that? Well, nobody can add and subtract here. But anyway, they pulled in about $7,500 last night. And they were saying people were handing them $100 bills, $50 bills, more than the $25 that everybody was supposed to. It was a suggested donation. So what is it? $7,500. So that is right. Then nobody gave that much. She said people were handing $100 bills, but that was for the Cary campaign. I thought that was a good. No, it sounds like it's a great start. All right, one more hour of Enid coming up right here on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hear Colorado talk. This is Colorado's locally owned and operated AM 1150 KNRC, Inglewood, Denver's premier talk station.
KNRC News Time, 2 o'clock.
News Radio, I'm Pete Williams. She's just been sentenced to 5 months in prison, but Martha Stewart still has a sales pitch for her fans on behalf of her company and employees.
Continue to show your support by subscribing to our magazine, by buying our products, by encouraging our advertisers to come back in full force to our magazines. Our magazines are great. They deserve your support.
She was convicted on charges related to a stock trading scandal. Her former broker has now been sentenced to 5 months in prison. The U.S. military has decided not to pursue the case of the first American soldier since the Vietnam War to be charged with cowardice. He had asked for counseling soon after arriving in Iraq. Prosecutors in New York City say it was a clever scam, but not clever enough. They've arrested a travel agent accused of charging clients for adult fares, but then reporting the passengers as infants, much cheaper, and pocketing the difference. She was arrested at LaGuardia Airport. I'm Pete Williams, NBC News Radio.
There's a special place you go for painting and decorating, your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. And during cool summer savings, you'll find special deals, too. Right now, save $7 a gallon on Super Paint interior and exterior, our best-selling paints. So stop in for great service, expert advice, and right now, one cool sale. When it comes to paint and wallpaper, it's what we do, it's all we do. Ask how, ask now. Ask Sherwin-Williams. For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com.
Small businesses, big businesses. Who's there to help all those business owners? To find the right commercial property? To fight for improvements on tax codes and encourage real estate investment? To serve everyone would take a small army, wouldn't it? The National Association of Realtors has 1 million members, and we're doing everything in our power to help all businesses, big and small. The National Association of Realtors, 1 million members working for you.
Winner of 8 Associated Press Awards for journalistic excellence, including Best Newscast, award-winning news and entertaining talk. This is Denver's AM 1150 KNRC.
Good afternoon. Cloudy, 73 degrees. I'm Tim McLaughlin, KNRC News. An Iowa man was sentenced today for threatening Kobe Bryant's accuser. I'll have that story in a moment. Let's check traffic first. Here's Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
Southbound I-25 approaching 20th Street, getting back to some degree of normalcy now. Verizon Wireless has the information. But a stalled vehicle in there a little while ago. Sounds like police are making some progress there. One point southbound I-25 was jammed back to 53rd Avenue. Northbound I-25 at Highway 119. Fire department roaming around the area looking for a car fire. So far, they haven't been able to find anything yet. And southbound Highway 287 at Arapahoe Road in Lafayette. Boulder County Sheriff's Department looking for an injury accident. So far, they haven't found anything yet there either. At Verizon Wireless, they never stop working for you. Call 1-800-256-4646. Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
23-year-old William Roach of Davenport, Iowa, will spend 4 months in a federal prison camp for threatening Kobe Bryant's accuser. Federal prosecutor Jim Allison explains why the case caught the attention of authorities.
We are concerned that this young woman was targeted merely because she reported a crime.
Roach delivered the threat by telephone last July 27th. This report brought to you by Carfax. Denver District Attorney Bill Ritter has charged 42-year-old Vincent Martinez with 2 counts of second-degree assault and 1 count of false imprisonment. The charges alleged that Martinez assaulted his girlfriend on May 17th and again on July 11th while refusing to let her leave home. Martinez fled the home when police arrived and later turned himself in without incident. Martinez was the man police were looking for when they fatally shot Frank Lobato, who was unarmed. Meanwhile, the U.S. Justice Department is considering suing the Denver Police Department to mandate reforms in DPD. The possible lawsuit comes in the wake of Sunday's fatal shooting of Lobato. Federal lawsuits against other agencies have resulted in training, hiring, and use of force policies nationwide. In sports, Sean Estes is on the mound at Coors Field for the Colorado Rockies tonight as they play the second of four against the San Francisco Giants. Rocks lost 7-5 last night in their first game back from the All-Star break. Don't get stuck buying the lemon that broke down this morning. Ask your dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report now with a buyback guarantee or visit CARFAX.com for details. Your exclusive Weather Channel forecast is next. KNRC News Time is 2:04.
AM 1150 KNRC. The way Denver spells talk radio. KNRC.
Hello. I hear them trucks coming. They're coming round the bend.
Get discounts up to $13,000 and 0% financing with approved credit during the massive truck blowout at MedVet Chevrolet Wheat Ridge and MedVet Chevrolet Castle Rock. MedVet is stocked fence to fence with Tahoes, Silverados, and the all-new Colorado pickup. Profit is not a major consideration because everything is discounted to our lowest prices of the year. Only at the Big Gun MedVet Chevrolet Truck Center on the I-25 corridor, depart the 181 ramp Castle Rock, or on I-70 in Wheat Ridge, exit Kipling, exit Ward, but exit the giant MedVet Autoplex. Join us at the Douglas County Fair and Rodeo, July 30th through August 8th.
From Wyoming to New Mexico, everybody said, if you want a great deal, go to MedVet.
Chevrolet, an American revolution.
I'm Valerie Seagraves with the KNRC forecast from the Weather Channel. The scattered storms approaching from the west will be more prevalent first to the south, and then it fills in across the entire listening area, and we'll keep scattered thunderstorms with us through tonight. We should see a high right around 77, a low of 55. Sunshine returns tomorrow with a high of 79 and a slight chance of thunderstorms in 87 for the high on Sunday. For the Weather Channel, I'm Valerie Seagraves on AM 1150 KNRC.
73 degrees under cloudy skies. KNRC News Time is 2:06. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 2:35 or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
From AM 1150 KNRC, Denver's choice for talk. Now, one of the Mile High City's most compelling talk hosts, Enid Goldstein. The producer is Joe Anderson. Board operations, Jordan Lyles. Now, here's Enid.
2:06, 6 minutes after 2 o'clock. Welcome to the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. In this segment, my guest is Walter Mosley. He's a great favorite of mine, and he has a brand new book in his Easy Rollins series. And the book is called Little Scarlet. You can meet him tonight at Tattered Cover, Cherry Creek, 7:30 p.m. Walter Mosley, I'm so delighted you could join us today. Thank you for doing it.
Well, thank you.
I first learned about you from our guy, Bill Clinton, who probably, I don't know if he did as much to boost your reputation as a writer as I think he did, but I was looking for new mystery authors, and he mentioned you in some interview, or I read something where he loved your work, and I thought, gee, I've got to check him out. And then I loved what you did, so it was Bill Clinton who turned me on to you, Walter Mosley, and I don't think I'm the only one he's turned on to you as well, am I?
Well, you know, it's true. I mean, Clinton's endorsement, I guess you call it, helped me. You know, when Kennedy said they loved Ian Fleming went from selling 10,000 books in America to selling millions. And when Reagan left Clancy, same thing, but hundreds of books to millions. Now, when Clinton said he liked me, I went from selling like 10,000 to selling 18,000. Honestly, literally, truly. I mean,
you need is some literary Viagra.
But what happened was that after he did it, every journalist in America and half the journalists in the world knew who I was after that. And so it kind of, you know, paved a way for me that I wouldn't have had otherwise.
Well, I thought what was intriguing is that you are half black and half Jewish, right? Is your mom's Jewish, your father was black?
Yes.
How did that's an unusual combination.
I don't think so.
You know?
No, I know lots of people who have that combination. You think it's unusual, huh?
I guess I did, but I don't anymore.
No,
I thought that was intriguing about you.
It could be intriguing, but I don't think that it's unusual. I think that it's actually a pretty common mixture in the places I live,
Did you grow up in Los Angeles? Because E.C. Rollins lives in Los Angeles. I mean, the novels are set there. Did you?
Yeah.
And you're now in New York. But where did you grow up, in Los Angeles?
I grew up until I was about 18 or 19. I was in L.A., and then I slowly started wandering around. About 20 years ago, I ended up in New York, and I've been there ever since.
Talk to me about E.C. Rollins, and in the paper today, we've been saying it's the eighth in the series, and the Denver Post was saying it's in the ninth in the series. Can you clear up this mystery?
Well, you know, I wrote a book. My first book was a book called Gone Fishing, which didn't get published till some years later. It was a book about E.C. Rollins. It's E.C. and Miles coming of age in this mythical town called Pariah in the swamps between Texas and Louisiana. And that book is not a mystery. And so some people, you know, who are purists says, well, it's not a mystery, so it can't be in the series. But it's a book about Easy and Mouse, so some people count it, some people don't.
For people who have not read you, tell us a little bit about E.C. Rollins and where and where the kind of time period the novels are set.
I started writing the E.C. Rollins series because I wanted to write about that black migration from southern Texas and Louisiana, a little bit from Mississippi maybe, into Southern California after World War II. I just wanted to talk about it because nobody had really written about it, and it didn't seem a part of any kind of real-time history. And so I wrote it. I started writing about E.C. Rollins, and as I wrote, I realized that my subject really is black male heroes. And Easy is really a black male hero. He's from the rural South, but he's like, you know, he's just made for the city. He wants to be a property owner. He adopts children because he really likes kids. He really tries to trade in favors, you know. So, well, listen, if you fix my car, I'll see if I can get your kid out of trouble with those cops, you know, down on the South Side. That kind of stuff. And he just does, that's the kind of life he lives. And so he's a kind of an important member in the community and a very likable one. And he's willing to take chances, though. He's not as willing to take chances as some of the people he knows.
And you set the mysteries in the, what, like 50s, 60s, 40s?
The first book, Gone Fishing, is 39. The next one is 48. Then we go to 53, 56, 60, 63. I'm just moving on up.
Where is Little Scarlet set?
Little Scarlet set is 1965. It's the 5 days directly after the Watts riots.
Why did you go back in time to set these mysteries rather than currently?
To talk about that migration.
Look at the post-war kind of phenomenon.
And to see how people change. Easy starts off in the mysteries, 1948, Devil in a Blue Dress. He's 28 years old. And the book that's out right now, Little Scarlet, he's 45. So you see him over a period. You see him change. You see Los Angeles change. You see all of these that I consider major events. I think the Watts riots was one of the major events in the mid-century.
So when you're writing the books, then you have to go back in that time and do the research. Is that part of it?
Research.
Does that sort of put you in the right frame of mind for developing the plot, or do you already know where the plot is going to go when you...
I never know what the plot's going to go until I get to the end, and research has nothing to do with that. I research somewhat. I mean, say I read a few newspapers, and I look at it. You know, I did live through it, so... I do know a lot of stuff, but you know, novels today are so much about the psyche and about how we see, how we deal with each other, that it's much less about a whole bunch of factual material. I do some research, but you know, mainly I just write.
Why do you think the series has been so successful?
I wish it was more.
There was actually there was a film made of. I happened to see it the other day. Was it
Devil in a Blue Dress?
Yes.
And I made a book, a movie from another one of my books, Always Outnumbered. I did that for HBO. That was also from Lawrence Fishburne. Who knows? I mean, maybe I'm a good writer. I don't know. Or maybe I do know that I'm one of the only people in America who's ever written about black male heroes. and I'm one of the only people today writing about black male heroes.
And your audience is not a black audience. Your audience transcends race, I think.
There are a lot of different people who read the books. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do have a black audience, but, you know, there's all these other people. First, I mean, if you write mysteries, you have a mystery audience, because there are people who read mysteries, and, you know, they really don't care, you know, who the detective is. They really care how it works, how the plot works.
Tell me about the mystery reader. What kind of person is a big mystery fan? Any kind of salient details that jump out at you?
Everything from Clinton to, you know, some housewife in Peoria. I mean, everybody in America reads mysteries. When you look at the bestseller list, they're always there.
Why are they so tantalizing?
Well, I think that there are a lot of reasons. Number one, I think that a lot of people in America feel that they get the short end of the stick. They feel that they're not really protected. They feel in danger. And two things that mysteries do. One, it helps them understand their position. And two, it helps them kind of, there's a catharsis when they read it. You feel a little better after all this paranoia that may not really be paranoia that you've been feeling about living in America.
My guest is Walter Mosley. His new book is called Little Scarlet. You can meet him in Tattered Cover Cherry Creek tonight at 7:30. How did you become a mystery writer or a writer at all? And mysteries are only part of what you write. You write other books as well, as I recall.
I write many other things, nonfiction, literary fiction, so-called short fiction, science fiction. I do a lot. I just wrote a young adult novel that's going to come out not too long from now. So yeah, I do all kinds of writing. I didn't start writing until late. I was about 33 when I started writing.
What were you doing until then?
I was a computer programmer.
You were?
I worked for Mobile Oil and Dean Witter and a whole bunch of other people.
You went to college?
I did go to college, but I studied political science, not computer programming. But I started so long ago that you didn't need a degree. I mean, they didn't have too many degrees and, you know, to be a business programmer. You know, I just kind of picked it up on the job.
And did you graduate from college?
I did.
Where did you go to school?
I went to a very small... At one time, agrarian college, but I guess it's not anymore, called Johnson State College in northern Vermont. I got a BA from there.
In political science. And how do you wind up in computer programming from political science. You just needed a job and there was something available?
I was a computer programmer before I went to college. I was about 19 or 20, and I went to these people and I said, I would really like to be a computer programmer. And they said, well, listen, we'll train you. And they did. And, you know, so I did that, and then I went to college, and then I got out, and I went to graduate school for a little bit, but I didn't stay. And, you know, and I kept coming back to computer programming because it was easy.
And you knew how to do it. And then how do you make the transition? Did you always know that you wanted to write,
no.
Or how does it appear to you?
I never knew. I had no idea. I was 33. I was working for Mobil Oil at the time. It was a weekend. And instead of writing this code in this arcane language called RPG, I wrote on hot sticky days in southern Louisiana, the fire ants swarmed. I wrote the sentence. I looked at it and I said, well, that could be like a novel. I've read many novels that start like that. Maybe I could be a writer and I wouldn't have to be a dumb computer programmer anymore. Not that computer programs are dumb, but working at it, it's a really kind of isolating kind of job.
So what did you do after that?
Well, I just kept writing and writing, and, you know, I went to like a couple of classes, you know, that people had in their apartments, and I went to City College took workshops there and kept writing, and then I was a writer.
How old were you by the time you got your first book published?
My first book was published, Devil in a Blue Dress, when I was 38, 1990.
How long did it take you to sell it?
It took 6 weeks.
6 weeks?
It was very funny. I wrote the other book.
I've known writers where it's taken, you know, years to sell the first manuscript.
Well, I wrote Devil in a Gone Fishing, and I couldn't sell it. I tried for, not that long. I tried for about 6 months, and I couldn't sell it. And so then I kind of put it away, and then I wrote Devil in a Blue Dress. And the guy who was, like, running the program at City College said, well, let me see it. And I went away for a weekend and came back. He said, well, I gave it to my agent. She likes it, so she's going to represent you. And then 4 weeks later, you know, it was sold.
My goodness. And what happened when it was published? Did it cause much of a stir? Small?
It was a little thing. A lot of people liked it. And a lot of people were very kind of interested in it. But it was, a special thing. You know, it wasn't nobody thought it was going to be big.
How did Bill Clinton find you?
I think he reads mysteries. Like many other people, he reads mysteries.
So he reads he goes to bookstores, and even if they're not well known, if somebody on the staff recommends something
exactly.
to him.
I think there's a mystery bookstore in, that's no longer in D.C. He went there one day, and they said, you should read these, you know, about Walter Mosley. And he started reading them.
And things changed from there.
Things changed from there. We were also in the same time, trying to make the movie. It doesn't hurt to have Denzel Washington and Don Cheadle do a movie for you either. You know, I mean,
Don Cheadle's from Denver.
Yeah, Don Cheadle's from Denver. I know that. He's you have these people doing work, you know, for you, and so there's a lot of different things. I mean, I'm not trying to say that Bill didn't help, because he did, but there are other things that, you know, happen along the way.
My guess is Walter Mosley. The new book is Little Scarlet. There was a discussion about your work, and you were quoted, I think either the Denver Post or the Rocky Mountain News interviewed you. You were talking about literary fiction. Talk to me about literary fiction. What is literary fiction, actually? And so little of it sells anymore. What is it, you know, is it a Fustian kind of highfalutin category of literature? How would you describe literary fiction? And
it's always hard to describe literary fiction. It's fiction, either short stories or novels, very often about the human heart. I mean, you know, about and maybe an event in time and the human heart and its relation to that. Not unlike other kinds of fiction, but it doesn't have a genre. It doesn't have, like, you know, it's not centered around romance necessarily, or crime, or any kind of weird science or fantastical thing. It's, you know, a person, like the person who lives next door, living a life kind of like your life, and you're going through it. But the work, you know, it has depth, it has meaning, it has resonance in the society and the culture. And it's important. There's a lot of important work, you know. I mean, Philip Roth does really important things. Edna O'Brien does really important things. I mean, there are writers who do exceptional work. It's hard to separate the genres, because you might write a literary novel about a crime that got committed in a small town.
But then you're typecast. In a way.
Well, not necessarily, if you can get away with it. Because it's easier to describe books in the genres. Like, for instance, a mystery. A mystery, one thing that you know about a mystery is that you have to address the plot every four pages, maybe five. If you don't get back to the pot, it's not a mystery. At least it doesn't work. You can write. I remember my first literary novel, R.L.'s Dream. I wrote it, and I called my friend Frederick, and I said, you know, this is, I don't know, Frederick, I don't think it's a novel. And he said, why? I said, well, there doesn't seem to be any plot. And he said, well, what happens? Well, there's this old guy who's a blues singer. He gets sick. He gets a little better, and he remembers his life playing, including with Robert Johnson. And then he gets sick again, and he dies. And Frederick said, well, that's a plot. But it's very simple. Most of it is about his life. And you can spend a lot of time meandering in his life and what he thought and how he thought things and what he experienced. Literary fiction allows you to get very deep into certain parts of your story, whereas many of the genres don't. You have to come back to that plot.
Talk to me about what you just said about mysteries. You have to keep addressing the plot every 4 or 5 pages.
Oh, yeah.
Meaning what? You have to get back to the murdered corpse.
A crime has happened.
The crime has happened.
There are people involved, and you're looking into those people. Or those people are coming to you. You're talking to them. And you're getting more and more confused. Like, well, this certainly is going to lead somewhere, but where? I can't figure it out. I don't understand. That's the way the genre works.
When you sit down to write one of those, I've always thought it would be great fun. I always thought it would be wonderful to write a mystery, except I think you have to have a sense of direction, not unlike the sense of direction you have to find your way, you know, to read a map or find your way around a city. And I don't have that particular gene.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm thinking that as much as I think I might like to write a mystery sometime, I think you have to be able to plot and have a sense of direction in a certain way that I don't think I might have. Talk to me about that. Talk to me about what is required. When you sit down, what do you have? Do you have a thought? Do you have some beginning that you're going to go off onto, and your characters are going to lead you through it in some way and direct you in some way, kind of like Alice Walker?
Boy, now, and when Alice Walker came in at the end of that, that threw me off. Alice Walker.
She couldn't write The Color Purple until she could find a place, literally, in California where her characters would come to her. They wouldn't come to her in other places.
Boy. That sounds hard. I just start writing. I start with the first sentence, and the sentence carries me along. When I wrote Devil in a Blue Dress, I didn't even know it was a crime novel or a mystery until I was three quarters of the way through. I just write. You know, because writing is rewriting. No matter what you write the first time, it's not going to work. So you have to come back. And so once you have a whole frame, a whole kind of novel written down there, then you can come back and start worrying about the plot, who did it, where it was going, how it was happening, what needs to bring you from place to place.
You can do the fine-tuning.
Yeah. So, you know, I think anybody can write. And, you know, people like Raymond Chandler, you know, when I forget which movie they were making of one of his books, they called him, though, and they said, there was a person who got killed, and they said, we can't figure out who killed this person. This one murder in the novel.
Mm-hmm.
And Chandler says, I don't know.
I don't know either.
a lot of the noir genre is mood. And so Agatha Christie, now she was, I mean, her plots, they were crystalline. I'm not crazy about her work, but she has crystalline plots. There are certain
things. There's always logic.
But, when, you know, I do much more hard-boiled or noir or something like that. And so when the plot, even though it's important, is not nearly as important as character development. It's not nearly as important as what you're finding out about this world. So when you look at Little Scarlet is going to tell you why the Watts riots were important and what indeed changed in that world. I mean, that's why a lot of people come to my work and other people's work. There is a mystery, but underlying that mystery is a very kind of serious or what I think is an important thing that has happened.
Who do you like to read?
You know, you name. I mean, I've been reading the Oxford History of the French Revolution recently. I'm rereading Ross MacDonald's Find the Victim. I decided to reread Fahrenheit 451 the other day. I range around, read all kinds of stuff.
Who do you like as mystery writers?
I don't read many contemporary mystery writers. As a matter of fact, I can say I don't read any contemporary mystery writers, and I read almost no mysteries nowadays. However, I was very influenced by Ross MacDonald first, then Dashiell Hammett, and then Raymond Chandler. They're, you know, all really wonderful writers.
You just got a doctorate, along with your guy, Bill Clinton, at CCNY?
At City College up in Harlem, yeah, about 4 or 5 weeks ago.
What was your doctorate in?
Oh, I think it's all the same thing. It's just
humane,
like,
letters. Inhumane letters.
Yeah, humane letters.
honorary
humane letters. I didn't ask him. Like, can you go around calling yourself a doctor after that? He's saying, Dr. Mosley.
Well, maybe. You can. You could make house calls.
Literary house calls.
Do you ever teach?
I don't very often. I'm not so bad at teaching, but I don't like it because it takes the same energy to teach as it does to write.
Well, the line from Gore Vidal is, teaching has ruined more writers than drink.
Yeah, well, and he's absolutely right. That's absolutely true.
I think it's awfully. I mean, that's a hard go.
It's a really hard thing, you know, because it's a whole other world, it's a whole other world, it's a whole other political world, and you take all, you know, all of that creative energy that you have, and you give it to other people.
My guest is Walter Mosley. His new book is Little Scarlet. You can meet him at Tattered Cover Cherry Creek tonight at 7:30. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. And you're listening to AM 1150, KNRC.
Libs lover.
True love is the greatest thing in the world.
Conservatives hater.
Ignoramus.
We have absolutely nothing in common.
And we all know her. Enid Goldstein on AM 1150, KNRC.
Terracotta Warriors, a new action musical. Terracotta Warriors combines extravagant dance and songs with spectacular martial arts in an unprecedented fashion. Adapted from historical accounts of the life of the first emperor of China, Terracotta Warriors is a story of rule by terror, loyalty by force, and love by decree. Fight sequences are intertwined with scenes of romance and betrayal as the power of the realm clashes with human passion. Elaborate costumes and sets come together with incredible surround sound effects and unique orchestral music to immerse the audience in the emotion, the drama, and the battles of the 2nd century B.C. The United States premiere of Terracotta Warriors is now playing at the Buell Theater through July 18th only. Tickets are available at All King Supers, online at denvercenter.org, or call 303-893-4100.
We call it dry talking. Go to our website at knrcradio.com and look for details on how you can get a free KNRC travel coffee mug. That'll help on those morning commutes, and it may stop those stupid hot coffee spill lawsuits. There are few things that are free these days, but you'll find them at knrcradio.com. Go there, sign up, and the Drive Talking coffee mug will be yours. You can even get unlimited coffee refills in your fabulous new KNRC coffee mug at Sugar Beet Cafe. It's just another way for us to say thank you for making AM 1150 KNRC your number one choice for news and talk in Denver. AM 1150 KNRC.
I'm Steve North, CNBC Business Radio. Martha Stewart's stock soared today after her sentencing, but the rest of Wall Street ended the day and the week on a down note. The Dow dropped 23 points, closing at 10,140. The Nasdaq plunged 30 points, finishing at 1883. Stewart's high-powered stockbroker, Peter Bakanovic, received the same sentence this afternoon that Stewart got this morning, 5 months in prison and 5 months of home confinement. The domestic diva, who remains free pending appeal, pitched her company on the courthouse steps and vowed, "I'll be back." Her stock certainly started coming back today. Shares of Martha Stewart Living OmniMedia closed up more than 36%. Pharmaceutical giant Shearing Plough has agreed to pay $350 million in fines. It will also plead guilty to overcharging for drugs sold through Medicaid. And Washington plans to develop a huge bomb capable of destroying deeply buried targets. The contract could go to Lockheed Martin, Boeing, or Raytheon. Steve North, CNBC Business Radio.
Oh. And here's the kitchen with all new appliances and radiant heat floors.
Oh, honey, I've always wanted a home like this.
I can't believe it's in our price range.
Whoa, price range? I thought that was just a starting point.
Not working with a Century 21 agent. Century 21 agents pledge to help you locate the right property at the right price. Only Century 21 agents offer the Century 21 service pledge to help reduce the stress of buying real estate. Century21.com. Real estate for your world.
The Century 21 pledge is offered by participating offices. Each office is independently owned and operated.
Best omelet I've ever had. Must take highly developed skills. Skills I could learn. Special ways of cracking the eggs, moving the whisk. Maybe I could take a leave of absence. Just tell the boss I'm devoting myself to the omelet arts.
There's a time to let your mind go wherever it wants. It's called free time. And in the delicious spaces of Hyatt, it's well worth collecting. With Gold Passport's faster free nights, earn a free night at Hyatt Worldwide after every 2 stays when you pay with MasterCard through September 30th. For details, visit goldpassport.com.
Do you remember Alex in Family Ties?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome.
That was really Doug Kellen. Hear Doug afternoons at 3 p.m. on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi,
Hi, this is Bill O'Reilly. Join me live every weekday morning from 10 till noon here on AM 1150 KNRC. Now back to Enid Goldstein.
2:30 on the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. And with me in this segment, Walter Mosley, the novelist. His new book, Little Scarlet. You can meet him at Tattered Cover, Cherry Creek tonight at 7:30. I love the E.Z. Rollins series, but there's all kinds of other writing that you have done as well. Fiction, nonfiction, literary fiction. What'd you say, science fiction?
Yep, science fiction.
Speaking of science fiction, can we talk about politics? What's going to happen in the next election? Who are you going to vote for?
Huh?
This is a dangerous time, I think.
I agree with you, but one wonders if we're thinking the same thing. I'll probably vote for Kerry. You know, I mean, I'm certainly not going to vote for Bush, but I'll probably vote for Kerry. I think he's going to win.
Do you really? Because Colorado's a swing state. New York is Democratic.
Yeah,
and you're living in New York, so you're living in that bubble. When I was living in the Bay Area.
I travel everywhere. Though. I mean, I spent a lot of time in this country moving around. And I honestly think he's going to win. I mean, maybe he won't. Maybe Bush will win. But the problems with America are so deep. I mean, the problems with who we are and how we see the rest of the world and how the rest of the world sees us and the disconnect just between those two things needs so much change. And I'm not hearing anybody really addressing how America needs to change and deals with the
world. If you were running for office, what would you say about how America needs to change?
I think that we really need to understand what it means if you're going to take on the mantle of superpower. What that means, you know, how we need, you know, how it's our job to make things better in the world, to actually work for peace in the world. Also, in America, I mean, though it seems like a simple thing, there needs to be a really deep discussion about the difference between capitalism and democracy. I mean, a lot of people don't really even understand or think about that, is that capitalism is really interested in despots, you know, like, you know, Saddam Hussein or Papa Doc or, you know, whoever, you know, Batista. And democracy, you know, has no real interest in democracy. Democracy doesn't help capitalism flourish outside of the borders of the United States.
There was a time when people wanted to grow up to be good writers. Norman Mailer, it was thought of as being something muscular, it had meaning. And we're now living in a time when I think the role of the artist is more marginalized than it has been. And I hear complaints from writers, maybe not as successful as you are, who, if they're not selling blockbuster books, they, you know, every book is a high wire act. They might, even though they sell respectably, they might not get another contract for another book. You're in a more rarefied universe because you've been very successful. It's taken you a while, but you've been very successful. Talk to me about, in this time, in this political environment, the role of the artist, the role of the writer, unless you're writing a blockbuster, look at the New York Times bestsellers, unless you're writing a blockbuster, is there a place for it in the same way that there was?
Well, you know, you see, I mean, people say these things, and I mean, writers say these things, and it's such nonsense when they say it. I listen to them, and I think, well, do you really know the history of writing? I listened to some guys one day saying, well, we'd like to be successful like, you know, Faulkner. Of course, we don't sell like him. But as far as I know, Faulkner never sold more than 3,000 of any new book. The person who was making the big bucks and selling a lot of books, that was Edgar Rice Burroughs, you know, Tarzan, Pellucidar. The Wizard of Oz was selling really well. It's, you know, high literary writing or really good writing never sold really big. They didn't have a bestseller list, but they wouldn't have been. You know, Mike Hammer, you know, Mickey Spillane once had like the 10 top-selling books of a year.
You know what he used to say when he wanted money?
What?
He'd say, when he wanted to make more money, he went out and bought paper and pencil instead of writing. That's how he made more money.
So I think the mid-list writers have always been the mid-list writers, and they've always been marginalized in that way.
Explain to the audience what are mid-list writers.
There's somebody who sells, I think, really it's a number. There's somebody who sells somewhere between, I think now it's gone higher, like 18,000, and, you know, at the high level, 50,000 books, you know, maybe a little less than that, 40. And that's mid-list. And you know, and you're doing fine, you know, that you're making money because you get 15% of the cover price of the book. I'm talking hardbacks. But, you know, you're not going to make it on the bestseller list. You're not going to get invited to certain parties.
What are you selling?
Huh?
What are you selling?
It depends on what book I write. I wrote a book criticizing America's so-called war on terrorism, and I got... I think I sold 12,000 of those. So that's kind of low mid-list. And, you know, with a book like this, you know, maybe I'll sell, you know, 100,000 books. I don't know. Something like that. I mean, Da Vinci Code selling 7.5 million so far.
Right.
5 million people you meet in heaven by Mitch Albom, I think it's 5 million so far. You know, those are the big people. You know, I'm not there.
But two of your books have been made into films.
Yeah, well, you know, you make a little bit of money off of films. You don't make, you know, writers never make a whole lot of money. And certainly, the people who make money on films are people who make films. The people who put up the $50 million to make the film, they're the ones who make money if there's money to be made. And there's always money to be made. Writers get paid, and you get paid well, you know. But it takes forever to make a movie. So, and I'm not complaining. I'm doing just fine. You know, I hover in the mid list, and sometimes I go a little above it, and it's kind of nice. I'm pretty well known as a writer. I have certain entree in the world, and, you know, so it makes me happy.
You get invited to good parties.
I get invited
you
to good parties.
You get honorary doctorates along with Bill Clinton.
If you want to make money, you go into real estate. I mean, there's no writer that makes as much money as Donald Trump. I mean, that's it. That's true.
There's no writer that has as bad a hairdo as Donald Trump.
Well, there's a few. You know, this is not a money field. I mean, a lot of people feel marginalized. You know, people who are genre writers feel marginalized because they can't be nominated for the Pulitzer or the National Book Award. The literary writers feel marginalized because, you know, they don't make it to the bestseller list, and they're wondering, you know, how come people aren't reading their incredibly difficult to read books? You know, if you don't like what you're doing, or if you don't like how it's working out, you either do something else or forget it. Because life is, you know, it's too short to be worried about stuff like that.
And we're all renters, and the clock is ticking.
Yeah.
If you were giving advice to somebody who wanted to embark on the life of a writer, somebody who wants to be a writer, somebody who may want to write a mystery, what would you say to them?
Well, you know, the first thing, of course, is write every day. The big thing is the writing. You should write every day. It doesn't matter how long, but you should write every day. And write and write and write. And for the first year of writing, you don't even have to worry about it. Then come back and look at what you've written and see where you were going and try to figure out what the book was that was in your head that was trying to come out. After you've worked out a long time, maybe you've been in a couple of workshops, you've met with some people, you've written, you've shown some people, not your parents, you're writing. at the end of that time, you need to find an agent. And you need an agent. There are two things about agents. Number one, they never charge you. If they charge you, that's not an agent. You should go to somebody else. Number two, you read books and you see a book that you think, well, this book has some resonance with my book. So you call the editor and say, well, who's the agent? You call the agent and say, you know, I've written a book much like this book that you represent. Would you read it? Usually they say yes. You send the book in, and either they're going to publish it, or they're going to help you try to get it published, or they're going to explain to you why they think it didn't work. And then you can go back to the drawing board. That's what I'd say.
Walter Mosley, it's been a great pleasure to meet you. I have talked to you and interviewed you by phone, and I've been a great fan of your work.
Yeah.
And I've been intrigued about your life, too, and I'm delighted that you could join us today. Walter Mosley, his new book, Little Scarlet, you can meet him tonight at Tattered Cover, Cherry Creek at 7:30. I'm Enid Goldstein. You're listening to the Fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club on AM 1150 KNRC.
Award-winning news and entertaining talk. This is AM 1150 KNRC.
2:38, time to check into the KNRC newsroom for an update from Tim McLaughlin. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Enid. Cloudy in 73 now. Police have arrested two suspects in this week's liquor store robbery and shooting. I'll have that story in a moment. First, let's check traffic with Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
Heavy afternoon volume already building on the freeway system right now. Carfax has the information. Seems to be particularly bad southbound I-25 from about 104th Avenue on in toward downtown. Stalled vehicle at 20th Street started most of that, and now we just got one rather large wall of cars trying to get into town from Thornton and Northland. Watch for some slowing northbound I-25 around Alameda because of an earlier stall. Already starting to see that increase in volume northbound on I-25 from Hamden on up through the T-Rex project. Remember that accident on I-25 this morning. Don't end up buying that car. Ask your dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report, now with the buyback guarantee, or visit Carfax.com for details. Steve Smith in the KNRC Traffic Center.
Two suspects have been arrested in connection with a homicide at a northeast Denver liquor store on Wednesday. Spokesman Sonny Jackson of the Denver Police Department says homicide detectives took into custody 23-year-old Orlando Thomas and 20-year-old Clarence Jenkins. Thomas is being held under investigation of first-degree murder and aggravated robbery, while Jenkins was taken in as a possible accomplice. Killed in the robbery at his store at 1630 East Bruce Randolph was 55. 5-year-old Getahun Hagos. This report brought to you by General Motors. Eagle County needs to seat a jury for its most famous court case. That's why today it began sending jury summonses for the Kobe Bryant rape case, set to begin August 27th. A record high 999 county residents will receive the summonses, roughly four times the usual amount. Bryant is accused of sexually assaulting a Vail area hotel employee in June of last year. The grand jury investigating the recruiting practices within the CU football program got an unexpected day off. The panel today got bumped from its meeting room to make way for a grand jury regarding another case. Last week, the CU panel heard from football players. Its existence suggests criminal charges may still be filed against the program. The Buffs program is accused of using sex and alcohol to attract recruits. Even when the traffic is light, anything can happen. Be prepared with OnStar. Advisors are ready to help 24 hours a day. Plus, OnStar personal calling and virtual advisor helps you avoid delays ahead. OnStar, always there, always. We'll take a look at the KNRC weather forecast next. KNRC News Time is 2:40.
Rush, rush.
Anyone else has to go, do it now. I ain't stopping again.
Middays, the Rush Alternative. Enid Goldstein, noon till 3 on AM 1150 KNRC.
Hi, I'm Evelinda Ehrman.
And I'm Judy Schwartz. We co-host Style Matters Live. Even if you're not born with great style, you can buy it, just like we do. And this extends to our homes. Element, Denver's newest furniture store for urban home furnishings, accessories, and artwork, meets all our style needs and will meet yours, too.
Element has multifunctional furniture to maximize your space in a condo, apartment, loft, or smaller home. The clean lines of Element's furniture for today's urban lifestyle will work with what you already own.
You'll love their eclectic mix of styles, all presented in a way you can envision in your own home.
Prices are affordable, with lamps as low as $100 and sofas starting at about $1,000. Interior design services are available.
Element is open Monday through Friday, 11 to 6, Saturday, 10 to 7, and Sunday, 1 to 5. Element is located at 77 West 9th Avenue, a half a block west of Broadway in the Golden Triangle. 303-825-3770.
Element. Your lifestyle, your home, your element.
Checking the KNRC weather forecast, mostly cloudy with some scattered thunderstorms and maybe some heavy rain possible through the afternoon into the evening hours. After midnight, it'll be partly cloudy, maybe some patchy fog as well overnight. Tonight's temperature down into the upper 50s. For tomorrow, mostly sunny in the morning, then partly cloudy later in the day, maybe some thunderstorms as well. Mid-80s for tomorrow's high. Cloudy and 73 now. KNRC News Time is 2:42. I'm Tim McLaughlin. Our next news at 3 o'clock or when it breaks on AM 1150 KNRC.
Sell your car.
Phil, what is all this?
We're trying to beef up our advertising for the Mile High Suburban Buy. Decided to give these Gregorian monks a try.
What's the Mile High Suburban Buy?
It's the newest way to sell your car. It's all the rage.
I can hear that.
See, we offer sellers access to over 500,000 readers in 19 suburban newspapers. You know, the ones you actually read.
Gotcha. How much are you charging?
$29.99.
They're really taking this seriously.
Yeah, we all are. There are a lot of ways to sell your car, and we want to be the best. We've put together a crack team of classified employees who'll help you craft your message and make your ad work for you. We're serious about helping real people and real communities sell their cars fast for less.
Sounds great. I've got a car I'd like to sell.
Just call Community Classifieds at 303-279-5541. That's 303-279-5541. Okay, he gets it.
Sorry.
Call Community Classifieds today, 303-279-5541.
While the other stations are into sports and infomercials on the weekend, we do what we do best. Talk.
Talk to me. Make me happy.
We're talking here.
Please listen to me.
Listen for live local talk weekends on AM 1150 KNRC. You're listening to the Enid Goldstein Show on AM 1150 KNRC. Here again, Enid Goldstein.
2:44 on the fabulous Friday edition of Enid Live, coming to you live from the Denver Press Club. I'm yours until 3 o'clock. And in this segment, and we always have a theme for our Press Club broadcast, it's gambling, even though the theme has gotten stretched in today's broadcast to include the police shooting and Walter Mosley. Joining us in this segment is Dee Dee LaRue. She's an artist. And I'm looking at one of her works here, and these are... You really have to see this. Four animals playing cards. is the gambling significance. And here from the artist statement, started in early January going to a bookstore to buy a discounted calendar. Pickings were slim. After going back and forth between M&M and dogs playing poker, the latter went out. After looking at the calendar on my bathroom wall, she writes, for a couple of weeks, it occurred to me the visual of dogs playing poker was a perfect metaphor for the current world political scene. Just when this bizarre image became a part of American iconography is not known to me, but I realized I had seen the familiar tableau all my life. It was hard to limit the piece to four players. There were many candidates to choose from. She said, I wanted the current players on the world scene and portrayed them with breeds of dogs that were indigenous to the countries represented. George Bush, is that the first or the present?
The present.
Oh, Dickie. I chose to portray as a labradoodle. Oh, why didn't I think of that? A trendy crossbreed of standard poodle and Labrador. An expensive and elitist dog of unpredictable nature. He's playing cards, this doggy, with Tony Blair, represented by a brown-nosed English bulldog, looks nervously at Osama bin Laden, looking very much like the national dog of Afghanistan, the Afghan hound. And lastly is Kim Jong, nuclear-armed North Korean communist dictator, number one rated in human rights violations, is shown as a Korean Jindo dog. Only two hands are visible in this game. Jong throws his down, refusing to play, with Osama holding his close to the chest. So you have to see this. It's a wonderful, these doggies. What's your medium here, Dee Dee?
It's a mixed media process that I invented myself over about a 10-year period. I call it neocartonage as an alternative to the very nebulous mixed media. And cartonage is a term used to describe the combination of materials the ancient Egyptians used to construct their sarcophagi and sacred objects, which I found out was wood, linen, and papier-mâché, very similar to my work. I try to get away from the papier-mâché pinata third-grade art project kind of mindset of people that think my work is purely papier-mâché. That's one ingredient, but many, many more materials are worked into the mess.